I'm going to call taxes to order. And we're going to go to the tax bill first so we can take public testimony. We can't do the K-12 bill till after the floor because it's not engrossed. And at that time, we'll see it in its right, in the correct form. So if we can just start with public testimony on the tax bill, and then after that, you know, if we can do some amendments before we go to the floor, that would be great, but I don't know if we'll get there because I don't know who all is testifying. So with that, we'll take public testimony on the tax bill. If anybody would like to talk to us for or against any provisions or share their thoughts.
Madam Chair, just a couple of amendments. Right, now I'd like to
Well, I don't have mine, Representative Garofalo. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Genevieve Plumidor. I'm with Life Science Alley. I know we've been before this committee before, but just as a reminder, we're here representing the state's medical device and biotechnology industries. First of all, I just want to thank you for your continued support of the Angel Investment Tax Credit. By extending the program for 2 years, the program has leveraged many investment dollars to the state in the high technology fields, as it was evidenced in the Department of Revenue's Angel Investment Report to the legislature last year. Life Science Alley has some concerns because we haven't had a chance to hear anything regarding the definitional changes in Article 4, Section 1, which adds to the definition of what a qualified business is, researching or developing a proprietary product or process. As you know, each year the credit is used up quite quickly. This year the 12.7 was spoken for by March 3rd. And Life Science Alley believes that this change may have an effect of diluting the effectiveness of the credit and deter from the original intent and documented success of the credit in the high technology fields. High tech companies in our life science space are endeavors needing massive amounts of capital, as you know, and this credit was originally intended to help those high technology companies overcome the valley of debt, which you've had many testifiers who have come before you this year alone, including one of our members, Pramod Hosharon, who had his life-saving technology that he showed the committee regarding the cooling of the heart, Nervamed technology. And what Pramod testified is that in this very committee that what we hear, this early stage development and in this research stage, it's harder and harder for VCs to make the decision to invest in those high-risk technologies. So that's my one comment on that. And lastly, I would like to just comment on the inclusion of Representative Anderson's Senate file, House File 1963, extending the R&D tax credit to sole proprietors. We had spoken in support of this, and so we again speak our support of that provision.
Thank you. May I just ask you, and I apologize because I was sort of getting adjusted to the room.
No.
The objection is, are you talking about the language that was passed in the first tax bill? You're hoping this committee will amend that? Or are you talking about what's in this tax bill 2 that amends tax bill 1?
Correct. So
okay.
So this language is found on 59.34
okay.
of the DE that was posted yesterday. So I would love some clarification too. So that just includes adding another element of a qualified business. Again, we're just concerned because a qualified high technology business is what was originally conceived in the bill.
Okay, I'm just gonna.
No problem.
Wait, yeah, I just want to look it up here, and maybe Ms. Manzi. I don't know if she's in the room even.
And Madam Chair,
where did that come from? Representative Anderson. Yes, please.
I would like some clarification on that too, and what that really means. So now we're taking an R&D credit that was originally intended for high tech and giving it to tourism.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, Ms. Manzi is here, but Representative Simonson, I think, probably wants to talk about this. And Representative Simonson, please.
Madam Chair and members, and I think an explanation by Ms. Manzi would be great when she is here. But in addition to that, I just want to say that what you're seeing here is sort of a compromise, if you will, between the current language, current law, what we passed, what seems like yesterday, and with another bill that was come before the legislature this session that dealt more specifically with Greater Minnesota. And the intent here is to try to balance at least for a period of time, the amount of monies that go to Greater Minnesota, especially in the R&D field. And R&D is not necessarily in Greater Minnesota always going to be specific to high technology. And if you get out into Greater Minnesota, into some of those areas, there are certainly differences. So by bringing in this language, we encourage R&D proprietary product, not only in the high technology field, but in businesses that are important to Greater Minnesota, like agriculture, tourism, forestry, mining, manufacturing, or transportation, not just tourism.
But, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
To that point, if Representative Simonson could explain to me, where is their R&D, where is their research and development in tourism?
Madam Chair?
Yes. No, who said that?
Was that you? Me.
Oh, Representative Simonson.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I think you find R&D in just about anything, but to these points, this is language that was taken out of, if you look onto the next page, I'm working off the 1023, but it's the same language that you see on the following page. It's in current law.
Okay, and I should just be clear. I just wanted to understand your testimony, so we're not trying to debate the provisions. This committee is going to do that via amendments and not, but I wanted to understand it. But I think one thing that helps as people think about it, and I think Representative Simonson has expressed it correctly as a sort of, you know, in between sort of two sets of viewpoints around this capital on how this program should work. But if you look at line 59.34, it's researching or developing a proprietary product, process, or service in the list. Now, if there isn't anybody doing any of that, then the angel credit investor couldn't be qualified to receive the tax credit if there's nothing going on in that area. So there has to be someone out there doing something that would qualify to even appeal to the investor. So I don't think we have to worry about that.
Madam Anderson. But the difference is how the language is written on the two segments. Because if that was truly the case, we wouldn't need the language on page 59. But as the language is written here now, it says researching or developing a proprietary product and so forth, or in the field of ag tourism. So it says that it doesn't have to be research and development for ag tourism, forestry, or mining. It could be anything under the sun. So it could be, yes, we want to dump more money into Explore Minnesota or whatever, and so we're going to take it from the angel investor credit, which then really kind of defeats the purpose of defeats the purpose of the program in the first place, right?
Well, I have been told there is an author's amendment, and I don't know who has it, and I want to apologize to everyone because we really should not be debating this. We're supposed to be taking public testimony, and certainly Representative Anderson and Simonson can offer amendments on this part of the bill or any other part of the bill when we mark up the bill. But just for some clarification, because that's, you know, I started it because I asked you that. I was trying to figure out where you were going with that. I'm just going to ask Ms. Manzi to jump in a little bit here and do some clarifying, but I understand there's an author's amendment that addresses a drafting issue with that. Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Department of Revenue staff raised this same concern with us. It was not the intent of Representative Simonson, who I worked on this language with, to allow this for any activities in agriculture and then the remaining fields that are listed there. So the author's amendment will be redrawing this. Let me see. So that clauses 1, 2, and 3 will remain as they are in current law. Actually, 3 will become 4, and the new 3 will read, researching or developing a proprietary product, process, or service in the fields of agriculture, tourism, forestry, mining, manufacturing, or transportation. So it will be expanding the things that you can do in those fields to not just researching or developing a proprietary technology, but also to researching or developing a proprietary product, process, or service. So the technology is allowed in those fields under current law, and then this will be allowing it for researching or developing a proprietary product, process, or service as well. So the proprietary requirement will still be there, and the research and development requirement will still be there.
Okay, and I want to, again, and Representative Anderson, to you as well, this author's amendment, I have been told, is my amendment. and while that sounds funny to the public, this is exactly why we have this excellent folks in the Department of Revenue and nonpartisan staff to read page and line and find these pieces that Representative Anderson, I really understand where she's coming from now. I understand the testimony. But I think we're now hearing that that won't have the effect people thought it was once the amendment comes. And so I will offer that. We'll get that out there. But even if that still doesn't address people's concerns, every member of this committee can offer amendments and ask for roll calls and see how things play out. So. Okay.
Thank you.
Further testimony.
Madam Chair, Chuck Carnival, representing the Minnesota High Tech Association. I jumped up because I'm in the same position as the previous witness. We're concerned about the same provision and its effect on broadening the scope of the tax credit beyond what was the original intent of it. So if, with that clarifying amendment, so long as there's research and development and it's a technology-related activity, we're okay with that. I also just wanted to mention on the prior issue that you mentioned with respect to the changes that were made in the first tax bill, we did have some concern about the broadening of the scope of the availability of that tax credit statewide, because it has been so oversubscribed, and secondly, the limitation on who can take advantage of it, since most of the people who might be excluded from taking advantage of it are the natural folks who would be the investors at the early part and risk their capital. There'll be a witness later on, I believe, from the angel investor community who'll speak to that issue as well.
Okay, great. Thank you for your testimony. Further testimony on the omnibus tax bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Just wanted to thank you for the provisions in the omnibus tax bill that provide one-time property tax reductions for low and moderate income Minnesotans through the renter's credit and circuit breaker. In particular, the renter's credit reaches more than 300,000 low and moderate income renters all across the state whose property taxes are high in relation to their incomes. You've heard how the renter's credit is effective in limiting how much these Minnesotans pay in property taxes, but low and moderate income Minnesotans have felt the impact of a 13% cut to the renter's credit made in 2011. Last year's tax bill made some important improvements to the renter's credit, and we thank you for taking an additional step this year for an additional one-time property tax reduction for all Minnesota renters who qualify for the renter's credit. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Haugy. I'm with Homeline. I'm an organizer with Homeline. Homeline is a nonprofit organization that provides free tenant advocacy services to renters across the state. Our primary service is a free tenant hotline that renters can call and get legal advice about their rights. Because of the nature of our hotline, we learn a lot about the issues and trends affecting renters, and it provides opportunities to work one-on-one with tenants on policy issues. The renter's credit property tax refund is one of the top priorities for the folks that we serve. Thank you for including a 6% increase in the renter's credit in the omnibus tax bill. As Nan mentioned, the credit's targeted to households that are most at need of property tax relief. As you may know, the rental market in the Twin Cities is extremely tight right now. Apartment rate vacancy rate of 5% is generally considered an equilibrium point. It's been reported that it's been less than 3% vacancy rate for nearly 3 years. This has resulted in landlord's market where rent increases are the norm every year. Average rent in the Twin Cities has increased about 8.5% in the last 3 years. We haven't seen something like that since the late 90s. Needless to say, renters are facing a difficult time while other costs of living are increasing too. Many folks, especially seniors and people with disabilities, are on fixed incomes and are having difficulty making ends meet. And that's really where the renter's credit comes in. It makes a real difference in people's lives when they receive that credit every year. Every year around about this time is when they're applying, and we start hearing stories from renters about the types of things they spend it on. The refunds is timed perfectly for families with kids. It comes in mid to late August when everyone is preparing for the start of school. It's not uncommon that refunds go directly towards clothes and school supplies for the new school year, as well as child care for siblings who aren't off to school yet. I've organized renters for about 11 years, and the one thing I've heard consistently is that the refund goes towards basic needs. It's almost exclusively spent within the nearby community on items that we all take for granted. I hear from seniors who spend their refunds on out-of-pocket prescription costs and other important medicines, eyewear and dental expenses not covered by insurance, winter boots and other seasonal clothing needs. maintenance and upkeep on automobiles or other transportation costs like metro mobility, especially for seniors to get them mobile into their doctor, stocking up on groceries for the winter, and just generally catching up on overall household expenses. Just yesterday, I talked to a few renters. I talked to Debbie from Minneapolis, who's excited about the potential of getting an increase. Her credit goes towards hearing aid batteries that her medical assistants can only pay a certain amount towards. And lastly, Nora from Eden Prairie I talked to. Her money goes towards rent increases that she sees every year and to pay for medications. She recently had open heart surgery, so a good amount of her credit goes towards the price of drugs. I appreciate the time to address the committee, and thank you very much for the increase.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Hauge. Thank you. Further testimony on the omnibus tax bill. Yes, please, Representative Loon.
Just a quick question while testifiers come in. Could you have maybe research staff remind me of what the income levels are for the renter's credit for people to qualify?
I don't see Mr. Well, Mr. Hines is there. He's pointing over to her. No, now she smiled. Ms. Manzi's here. You want to join us just at the table there? Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. If you can remind the committee what the income limits are for the renter's credit.
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, I don't have that one committed to memory since it gets adjusted for inflation each year. I believe it's around $58,000 for the current filing year. And I do not have a piece of paper right here that tells me that, but I can give that to you more precisely later if you'd like, but it's right around $58,000.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ballpark is fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Ready?
Please, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I'm here on behalf of a number of groups that I represent that are seasonal commercial lakeshore businesses. And I want to talk specifically about Article 2, Section 9 of the property tax section. The seasonal recreational property tax classifications that you have in the bill reflect more not a decision of the legislature, but a decision of the assessors that is required to assess property at their highest and best use. And lakeshore property is extremely valuable in Minnesota, and that's not a bad thing. But for seasonal property, commercial property owners, of which less than 2% of the lakeshore in Minnesota is dedicated to commercial use, for those properties to be assessed at their highest and best use, which is often to break them up and sell them as individual private developments for homes, to pay that highest and best use tax on a full commercial rate makes it difficult, if not impossible, for many of them to remain in business. And to give you an example, just in the resort area, in 1974, Minnesota had over 3,000 resorts. We are down now to about 900. And when your land value becomes greater than the value of your business as a going concern, they end up being sold. And those resorts and that lakeshore property and the marinas that are affected by this property tax provision are the ways that Minnesotans access our natural resources. And the policy decision of the legislature to help those businesses with this assessing problem by developing a tiered system of property taxation so that in their 3 and 4 month window of business when they are open, they can afford to stay in business and not pay full commercial rates is critical for them. And I would urge you to move cautiously in that area, whether it's a seasonal restaurant. And we had a little discussion about this in committee. They are not in competition with McDonald's. If you read the language of the bill, these are seasonal businesses. They're open 250 days or a year or less. Or they derive 60% of their income during a short period of time. They are not in competition with the restaurant in town. And if you ask the people in town and the legislators who supported these provisions, the communities will tell you that the negligible shift of property tax burden, which is negligible, you can't measure it, is supported by the community. They want these amenities. They want these businesses. They want these jobs. And this provision is going to make it extremely difficult for them to remain in business. And lastly, Madam Chair and members, I feel bad that I, in my testimony in the property tax division, that I didn't appear sufficiently pitiful as the Minneapolis Club or Representative David's inns in his district, because they're no longer in the bill, and so now we're focused on seasonal restaurants.
You didn't just say Representative Davis was sufficiently pitiful, did you?
Representative Davis? I didn't appear that way.
Representative Davis?
I'll wait.
Okay.
So there, Mr. Carlson. In fact, after we created the seasonal recreational tiered system, Representative Davids for years tried to get his businesses into the creation of the seasonal rec. He gets to stay in, and now my clients are out. That's unfair. Madam Chair, in all seriousness, this will have a significant impact on the tax rates for a few number of businesses that may make it very difficult for them to remain in business, and I hope you seriously consider that. The legislature's been great in promoting tourism and recreational opportunities. This takes us in the wrong direction, and I hope you'll consider not moving forward with that provision. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do want to thank Representative Dabney for the 4C in issue, taking care of that. But when we were having our little discussion yesterday, I was thinking that, well, he must have taken care of 4C, because, and I do thank him for the in issue, but if you look at Section 9 there, Class 4C, 7 and 8, Class 4C, 9, Class 4C, 10, Class 4C, 11, those are all troubling, and I agree with everything the witness has said here, except the pathetic thing, or what was that he said?
Pitiful.
Sufficiently pitiful. But if you look at 4C9, I've just been in contact with some folks from Lanesboro, which is designated by this legislature as the bed and breakfast capital of Minnesota. We're trying to figure out how many of the bed and breakfasts would be put out of business with this provision. So I have a question maybe for Mr. Carlson or some staff. If you look at the 4C9, owner-occupied bed and breakfast, how much would their property taxes go up? Would it be doubled or tripled? Or, I mean, these folks are actually running on a pretty slim margin the way it is. And I'm sure many people around this table have enjoyed the bed and breakfast in Lanesboro and Preston and Harmony. Who could...
Is Mr. Hines still in the room?
No, Mr. Hines is up drafting an amendment to eliminate these provisions.
Oh, or Mr. Michael,
or maybe Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Carlson, did you want to...
You know, just on the back of the napkin kind of calculation, Representative Davids, you're talking about a tiered rate, so on their first $500,000 of value, they are taxed at 0.05%. And then by the time they get to the full value of their property, they're taxed at 1.5%. If you're moving them now to full commercial at 3%, you are at least doubling, if not more, of their tax burden. And the property taxes that many seasonal commercial businesses pay and bed and breakfast is their largest operating expense. That is their largest expense, and we have an opportunity here to at least double it, if not more.
Well, Madam Chair, if the rate in most of mine would probably be valued under $500,000, the folks I represent, so if it's at 0.5 and it goes to 3.0, wouldn't that be six times as much?
Depending on their valuation. That's the whole purpose of the tiered approach, is to hold down that tax rate on the first part of your value. That's the whole point of trying to address these, you know, seasonal and part-time businesses in that fashion.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Carlson, let me get this right. Let's say there's a bed and breakfast in Lanesboro at $350,000. They'd be going from 0.5 to 3.0. Is that what we're saying?
I don't know any other way to read the proposal.
Okay. Members, I hope you're listening to this. This is something that we really don't have to be doing. You know, I would think there are some Ansel's district up there, especially with some of the resort things. And my amendment would also take care of 4C11, Majority Leader's box provision that he's concerned about there. So just think about what we're doing. If we're going to take a little bed and breakfast, a small family business in Lanesboro, Minnesota, or Preston, or Harmony, and we're going to raise their property taxes by six times, that does put them out of business. And the folks in Lanesboro, as we speak, are meeting and visiting and talking about this. And so I gave Representative Dabney's number and Chairman Chesky's number, so I'm sure you'll be hearing from them. And, of course, that could all be taken care of with supporting my amendment later on here. But let's please think about what we're doing here, raising property tax by six times. And, I mean, Grand Rapids has some beautiful facilities up there, and I certainly don't want to do that to the folks in Grand Rapids either. So, Mr. Carlson, I'm usually not supporting your positions, but I think you're right on this one. Don't you represent the trial attorneys, too, or something?
Well,
something like that.
No opinions on the news.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And as long as we're discussing the impact of property taxes on small business, I think it's important to recognize, and I'm not sure that that's been factored into some of the numbers that have been thrown around here, that in our property tax bill, we actually lower the statewide levy, and so that businesses that whose value is under $1,070,000, which I think is the types of business that I've been hearing people describing here, are going to get tax relief. Of course, the most significant is for the smaller ones, for those mom and pops that you're describing. They're going to get an even better tax break than those that are closer to $1 million. And so I think we have actually helped these small businesses in a variety of different ways. We need to balance that out.
Thank you. I really don't want to debate the bill right now, if possible. I would like to go to further public testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. So, because we're gonna revisit all this and all the amendments, that's obvious to me. So, Ms. Kadoon.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Kadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I first do want to thank you for including some provisions like the R&D credit, expanding that to sole proprietors. I think that's a good step forward to make sure we can help encourage more R&D in the state of Minnesota. Also appreciate the inclusion of just some of the cleanup language like the digital audio works for sales tax. Do have concerns, and my concern was what Representative Loeffler was just talking about, and maybe I misread the bill, but I did not see that we're actually lowering the levy for the statewide property tax. My understanding is that it's actually a shift of the $80 million among the statewide levy.
Yep.
Is that correct? Okay, so the concern I have is that you are shifting $80 million of the statewide levy with the CI change that's occurring. This will create winners and losers among business properties. Some of them will, the winners, some might be in the small business community, but some of the losers will be small businesses as well, because a lot of those properties are in larger property valued buildings. So there will be a lot of shifting. $80 million is about 10% of the total statewide levy. So this might be a substantial shifting that we are seeing. If you're really looking to lower small business taxes as well as other business property taxes, the better approach would be then to actually lower the statewide general levy. That would actually provide tax relief to all businesses in the state of Minnesota. And I would also mention some concerns that Joel Carlson said as well regarding just those class rate changes. That will be a shock to many of those businesses. Great tax increases to those businesses that are impacted. When the state before has made policy changes on the class rate system, because of all the shifting that occurs, typically you try to have then other mitigating factors to help minimize the impact to those properties that are being impacted. So with that, thank you. One other point I did want to make on is we also have concerns regarding the automatic increase that's included for the local government aid. That does increase the spending cost in the out years. Our concerns are that we really think that should be debated as part of appropriation bills in the future, if they should get increases or not. That puts more stress on taxpayers as you have those spending increases increase automatically in the budget. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Egger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors. And just want to start by thanking you, Madam Chair, and the committee for including retroactive federal conformity on the mortgage debt forgiveness issue. That was an important item, and there was a lot of bipartisan support for that. And I just want to briefly thank you for including an extension of the mortgage debt forgiveness provision, which Representative Earhart carried in House File 1957. Moving ahead for the current year, it's always difficult to predict what may happen at the federal level and when that may occur. So I think it's important for the state to try to get ahead of the curve on Congress and enact this provision right now. It's likely that it will be extended by Congress sometime later this spring. But regardless of what the federal government does, I think it is an important provision to pass on to Minnesota taxpayers who are in that difficult situation where they're going through a short sale or a foreclosure. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Others who'd like to testify on this omnibus tax bill? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for the volunteer recruitment and retention pilot program that you've included this year. I would like to specifically thank the authors, Representative Savick and Davids, and also Chair Lincheski and Representative Dabney, and all members for including the pilot. As you know, recruitment and retention is a huge issue for volunteer fire departments and ambulance operations across the state. And hopefully this will give us shed some light on some things we can do to stem the tide and keep Minnesota's very efficient volunteer ambulance and fire services in business.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Others who'd like to testify for or against provisions in the bill, welcome to the committee. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee, my name is Stephen Baker. I'm the county assessor in Ramsey County, and I'm here testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. We would first like to thank the committee and the chair and Chair Dabney and the Property Tax Division for the simplification of our system and the elimination of some of the specific classes that we just heard some testimony on. That's in Article 2, Section 7, 8, and 9. We think this is an important first step on taking action on some of the recommendations of the Property Tax Working Group's report from, I think it was late 2012. So we're appreciative of that. It's, you know, one of our general principles is that we typically oppose programs that benefit just a limited number of property taxpayers that are within the property tax system in terms of being within the rates, because they're non-transparent, they're complicated, and are difficult for people to understand. So we appreciate this step. I'd also like to just mention just briefly Article 2, Section 6, the section on business property. I think many of you have probably already heard other members of our association testify that we are generally in support of Scenario 3, which is not the scenario recommended by the department, which was Scenario 1, on excluding the tanks, the production, the tanks that are used in production at the five specific industries. We do want to thank the committee for limiting the exemption to just those five industries, but our concerns are really in a couple of main areas. One, this is a change to the definition of real property, which is really one of the basic building blocks of our system. The law of unintended consequences gives us some angst. And where is it going to end? And I think we should reasonably expect that there's going to be other businesses in here in future years seeking a similar expansion of this exemption, which then is going to impact property tax bases in ways that are difficult to foresee. Our shelter test for business property in Minnesota is a good, sound test. It's been well articulated by the courts. And while we still have a little bit of work to do, I think, in terms of getting everybody on the same page, we're confident that can be best accomplished through education, guidance, and some administration oversight by Department of Revenue, rather than doing a wholesale change to our definition of real property for these five industries. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate you being here. Further testimony. Welcome, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of nine of the larger and growing counties in greater Minnesota and four ring counties here in the metro area. First, I want to start off by thanking the chair for including the clarification on the application of the sales tax exemptions to cities and counties in this bill, and also the expansion of the exemption for under the sales tax on motor vehicles to city and counties road maintenance vehicles. While I appreciate that you had to do a lot of work to shoehorn the many different tax relief provisions in here, I do want to point out the delayed effective date on the clarification of the treatment of joint powers entities will disadvantage primarily smaller counties who are either required by statute or have responded to the entrees of this legislature to provide services in a more efficient or collaborative manner. Under the bill as it stands right now, they'll have to wait more than a year before they get the same sales tax exemptions that their larger brethren receive right now for providing the same services. So if some money could be found to address that issue, I'm sure a number of counties would appreciate that. I also want to express my gratitude for fixing the one-time retroactive ag credit in the bill proposed by Representative Marquardt. Payment by the Department of Revenue is the appropriate way to go and is much more administratively. I finally also want to express some appreciation for the production property transition aid in the bill for those properties that Mr. Baker was just going through, but I do want to echo his concerns. I guarantee you other industries are going to be back here in future years asking for exactly the same exemption. So this issue is not going to go away, and you are making it more difficult for assessors to assess these properties when they have to determine whether or not these properties are part of the production process. That'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate you being here. Further testimony for or against this bill? Welcome again.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Doug Carnival, this time representing the National Waste and Recycling Association, and want to testify about the provision in the bill that changes the language with respect to the sales tax exemption for local governments. I appreciate your changing the language. Since you are moving to a list, a definitive list, rather than saying including but not limited to certain services, and you have included waste hauling services and landfilling services or landfilling activities, we appreciate that. However, we notice there's an omission of recycling, and that is often provided in the private sector as well. I asked my members last night, and they indicated that there are some counties that are in the recycling business, actually haul, but also have recycling centers. So there is quite a bit of competition between the private sector and the public sector on the recycling side, and we're hoping there will be an amendment to clarify that as we move forward with amendments on the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Mr. Carnival, I should tell you, some folks on the committee know, because I say this sometimes, that I tend to listen to a lot of hearings, so I know what's going on in other places that I can't be, and I listened to your testimony on this item in the Senate, and I think just going forward, I think this whole bucket of the sales tax exemption, and should there be a definitive list or should there be sort of a general comment or direction to the department and, you know, who should be in and out and who's competing with who in the private sector, and then I'm sure we're going to hear from Mr. Carlson on some of these as well, and we heard from Keith Carlson. You know, I think this is going to take a lot of detailed conversations with a lot of people, and people should prepare for that. And just, I know the Senate's looking at it a different way and the Department of Revenue is looking at it a different way. So everyone, I think, is going to have to try to work together rather than in opposition to try to make this all work. It's going to get complicated, I think, depending on where we go with it. So I appreciate your testimony, and I appreciate your other testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
That I heard somewhere else,
conversation,
which was a little different. Thank you. Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Cities. And on that last point, I've talked to Mr. Carnival about that, and we are working, as you said, with the Department of Revenue, with the Senate and others. This is a tough issue to define, and I think we're all looking for that perfect definition of what private goods and services should and should not be exempted. So we're going to continue to work on that between now and conference committee, and we'll bring you some more ideas as we progress on that. On Article 1, Section 1, the pilot project for first responders and volunteer firefighters, we don't have a specific position at the League of Cities on that issue, but we think this is an issue that many of our communities have faced. Attracting and retaining volunteers has become increasingly difficult, and I hope that we can look at that program as a pilot and maybe in the future decide whether something like that would be extended statewide. Article 2, Section 5 of the bill is the LGA formula correction. As I testified in committee, we stand by that correction. When our board of directors at the League considered the LGA formula last year, as I described the bill to them, it was as it would be corrected under the representative lien correction here that is now included in this bill. We do realize there are some redistributions that go along with that, but we feel that was the intent of the legislature. It was the intent of my board of directors when the LGA formula came forward last year. So we do support Article 1, Section 5. Article 1, Section 6 and 7, the LGA appropriation increase, as I testified in division, Representative Simonson had that bill that at least started to increase the appropriation. We do support adding additional money to make that formula work into the future, so we appreciate including that in the bill. Article 1, Section 8, transition aid for the loss of more than 5% of tax base due to pollution control equipment. We do have positions supporting programs like that to help with the local government transitions of the phase out of that value, so we do support that. Briefly, Article 2, Section 12, changing the levy certification date. That was in Representative Loeffler's bill. We don't have a specific position, but many of my cities have taken a positive position on that particular change, Representative Loeffler, and we do support moving that back 2 weeks, especially as it relates to the fiscal disparities program. As Keith Carlson indicated in his testimony, Article 3, Section 12, all of the clarifications on the sales tax exemptions, we really appreciate you paying attention to the Representative Freiberg bill, the Representative Pugh bill, the Representative Poppy bill, and other bills. This is an important aspect to clarify the sales tax exemption. I share Keith Carlson's concerns about the delayed effective date, but we'll continue to work with you to find a way to make that effective more quickly. I've already mentioned the issue of the definition of goods and services generally provided by a private business. And then two other quick things, if you don't mind. The motor vehicle sales tax exemption for snowplows and road construction vehicles. We appreciate you bringing parity to the purchases of cities and counties to that of the townships. This has been a policy of the state since 1996 that the townships have been exempted on those purchases, and we do appreciate you adding this in the bill to bring some equity to the cities and counties. And then finally, on one other piece, the five-year extension of the TIF knockdown rule. We do appreciate you including the language in there to help with some of those districts that have suffered under the Great Recession and development challenges during that time frame. Briefly, Madam Chair, two other things that are not in the bill. We did bring forward a bill by Representative Fabian to do workforce housing TIF projects to allow those cities that have development challenges in their communities where their businesses need additional housing. We'd like to continue to work on that issue. It doesn't solve all of the housing issues in Minnesota, but this is an important issue for many of our businesses and our local governments to find a way to incent housing development where they have those challenges. And then finally, Representative Earhart's not here, but last year we had a little street improvement district provision in the omnibus tax bill that did not survive the conference committee process. Representative Lencheski added that to the bill last year, and we'd still like you to consider including the street improvement district concept to help us pay for the roads that you all know have suffered dramatically through this past winter. Madam Chair, sorry for the long testimony. We appreciate
I think there's a question for you, so okay. I'm glad you're here. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and if I might, I'd like to introduce in the back the FFA students from Chatfield, Lanesboro, and Plainview, Elgin Millville. They're teachers and some chaperones there. I just talked to them for a while, and I let them know that this was the best committee, and it is the best committee, in the House of Representatives, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Right on. Welcome to the hearing. So nice to have you here.
It's good to testify in front of the best committee.
Yeah, right. Further testimony. Yes, please. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Bo Burnson with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I know you just heard from some city and county representatives, and I do not want to repeat everything you've heard other than to say thank you for the sales tax provisions for local governments in the bill. I do also want to thank Representative Marquardt and the committee for the changes that were made on the mechanism for how this 2014 supplemental aid credit will be paid. There was extensive work done between the committee and the department and our county officers to make sure that the provision works from a county perspective, and we're extremely grateful that you heard our concerns. I do also want to say thank you on behalf of the 11 counties that will receive a supplemental county program aid appropriation in 2014 under this bill. We had several of those counties that were set to lose 25% to 40% of their county program aid this year, and this bill will take care of it for 2014. Lastly, because the issue has been brought up in some previous testimony about the definitive list of goods and services as it relates to the local government sales tax exemption, one thing for the committee to think about, and I understand this will be an ongoing discussion and ongoing process, is that when it comes to waste management, when it comes to recycling, these really are county-mandated functions that in certain parts of the state it's profitable for private industry to do, and they perform that function. In other parts of the state, there really is no private sector competition because it isn't profitable, and counties are performing these duties as a mandated function. So something for the committee to consider as we think about that issue. With that, thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Ms. Nauman, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. We represent cities in the 7-county metropolitan area, and I'll be brief. I want to first thank you for including the annual adjustment for the LGA appropriation. We appreciate the commitment that this expresses to the 2013 reforms that were passed last year, so thank you again. We also support the expansion of the homestead credit refund that is included in the bill in providing property tax relief. And I won't repeat what Mr. Carlson said, but we are also very appreciative of the local government sales tax exemption adjustments and look forward to continuing to work with you to further adjust those. We think the administrative ambiguities that have resulted with the new law are very important to resolve, and certainly we want cities to realize the full benefit of that exemption. We also support the modification to the TIF 5-year rule, and I know that I've spoken to the chair about our desire to see that maybe broadened a little bit, so we hope that you might consider broadening that window just a little as you move forward with the bill. And I also want to express support, too, for the street improvement district provision that is not included in this bill. We hope that that might be reconsidered. One provision that we do have some concern about has to do with the statewide property tax, the exemption of that first-tier property that does end up shifting taxes onto other properties, and that generally goes contrary to our policy. So I do want to express some concern there. But otherwise, just thank you for your time and appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you. Appreciate you being here. Further testifiers, for or against this bill? So are we through everybody? Okay, we're going to go into recess then. When we have the floor, we have an Atkins bill to move that's been laid over, and we want to take that up and move it. We already had a hearing on it, and we have the K-12 bill. So we'll try to start up right as soon as we're off the floor, but we're going to go in recess till then, and unless there's anyone else on public testimony. Okay, and it looks like we're going to go to room 5 when we come back. Representative Groffel.
Madam Chair, my apologies. Maybe you spoke with Representative Davids already. Is there a reason we can't start marking up the tax bill right now?
Well, I made a commitment to a number of people that I didn't think we would get through it by 2, and some folks are not able to be here voting because they're voting other places.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we could, I guess one thing we could do is we could get my author's amendment out there if it's done, but I don't know if it's done. Because folks, does anyone have a comment? I don't think it's done. I think we'll just recess. People that way can get a bite to eat because who knows how long we'll be here before we go to the floor. So with that, members, we are in recess. Thank you. And I call the Tax Committee back to order out of recess. And we're going to go to Representative Marquardt's Omnibus K-12 bill. And if we can just stick to just the tax provisions, it's just making a stop for us to hear about the tax provisions. And then, Representative Marquardt, does it go to Ways and Means?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, so Representative Marquardt, you want to move your own bill to Ways and Means, right?
That sounds good. Madam Chair, I'll move House File 3171 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And, Madam Chair, I do have an A-19 amendment that I'd also like to move. And it just corrects three little parts in there, something dealing with metro statistical area for an equity piece we're doing. It adjusts a debt factor so that we have things all even. And one word was inadvertently dropped in a part. So those are what the that amendment comes.
Okay, so Representative Marquardt has moved his bill before us, and he's now moved the amendment, which is the A-19. Discussion? Representative Garofalo?
Am I the only one who doesn't have a copy of the bill, or?
It was in your folders like this. Looks like this. Oh, we're only doing the tax provisions.
Oh.
We're not doing the whole bill. Just okay, the tax provisions.
What does the amendment do, Mr. Representative Marquardt? I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah. Madam Chair and members, three things. There is a provision in the bill, Representative Zerwas, Representative Fitzsimmons, that we changed the definition, basically a 7-county metro area to 11-county metro area, and Representative Garofalo, you'd understand this, for the equity piece.
Yeah.
And so we just clarify that. And then to offset the $6.89 million in levies, we changed the number on debt service equalization, raised that to offset that, so that number goes from $4,300 to $4,970. And then the word alternative was missing before the term compensation revenue. So it's very minor things. Just
Representative Garofalo, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Marquardt, so the $4,300, is that the equalizing factor?
Yes, on the first tier.
And so by bumping it up, I got it right, you're making it more generous?
Correct, and I'll explain. Okay. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so on the A-19, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The A-19 is adopted. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much. The levy target for our committee was zero. And so leadership demanded that. The tax chair kept a close eye on that, and that's what we have here in the bill is a zero levy target. So what we have is we have four small levies in the bill. One is on an equity piece that I just mentioned, Representative Zerwas. One is raising the safe school levies by $5. Another one is a building lease levy for the Rosemount Apple Valley Eagan School District. And the final one, and Representative David, you've talked to me, and I know you're a strong supporter of this, has to do with Moose Lake and Rushford-Peterson school districts and that disaster, where we've done some things to make it easier for them to go out and get a bond issue approved. And if we're assuming they do that, and so that would increase between those schools levies by about $2.88 million. So to offset that total of $6.89 million, on the debt service equalization, which Representative Garofalo was referring to, we raised the first tier equalization factor up to $4,970 and the second tier to $8,000. So, Madam Chair, those small levy adjustments, and then one to make sure it all equals zero at the end.
Okay, so we've got it. Questions on the bill? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Marquardt, you mentioned that there's a zero levy target on this bill. Does this include... Does that zero target include the property tax increases that were in the, or the additional levy authority that was in the first tax bill we passed this year?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, no, it does not.
Okay. And Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, do you recall what that levy number was?
I do. I think the latest I saw, Madam Chair, was the aid was $20 million and the levy was about $23
million. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Davids.
Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt, thank you.
Anyone else? Questions for the author? I don't think we're really taking public testimony on this. I mean, if someone's dying to, this is really just to hear the tax provisions that are in the K-12 omnibus bill. And it's had full hearings in Chair Marquardt's committee. Okay, if not, we're just going to vote it off to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The bill is passed, and you're off to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative
Marquardt.
Thank you,
Madam Chair and members.
And while we're still having people come over, if we could, I would like to go to get the Atkins bill dealt with. That's House File 2463. So I'm going to move to take it, to put it back before us and send it to the General Register. And I'll just recall for members, this was the bill that we had. We had a public hearing on it. In fact, Chair Davids chaired that hearing, and we didn't have possession, so now we actually have possession, and my motion then is to take House File 2463 and send it to the General Register. So any questions on that? Okay,
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson, yes, please.
Okay. Well, I have a couple of questions on it. Are we going to actually hear it? Or
we already heard it.
Okay.
We had a hearing on it.
So these are just our kind of questions?
Sure.
Right now?
I mean, we're just sending it to the General Register because okay. We had a full hearing, but as you recall, I know you were here and asked some questions.
Yeah.
And Chair Davids was chairing at that time. we didn't have possession, so we would have moved it that day, but now we actually formally have possession, so it's to move it along. So, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, there's several questions that I have with the bill. I wish that the author was here, because there's just some mechanics of the bill itself and how it would work. We got a fiscal note on it, and the issue that, as I understand it, and perhaps Ms. Templin can speak to this, the Department of Revenue says that they are not going to be sharing any of the IRS documents. They're actually prohibited by law in doing so. So the bill itself is, you can't implement it. It doesn't work. And so I'm wondering why we're even moving this bill forward, because it can't be implemented given the laws that we have currently in place. So I don't know. I would recommend that we not move it forward. And if I need to make a motion to that effect, I will. Because I think we need to study this issue a little bit more clearly. And if the author was here, he could maybe answer some of these questions. But from the information that I've gotten so far, this can't be done. So
I don't know if anybody, you know, he isn't here, and I didn't ask that he be here because we already had a hearing on it. And it's just to, now that we have the possession, to move it along. But if there's someone in the tax, you know, nonpartisan area who wants to, or Ms. Templin, I don't know if she's here, wants to comment on that. I don't know any. I honestly don't know anything about that.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Templin.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. There was a fiscal note completed on the bill, and the fiscal note showed no cost, and no cost to the Campaign Finance Board, and no cost to the Department of Revenue. I did have a conversation with Jenny Starr about the fiscal note, and I don't want to speak for her, but the Department of Revenue showed zero cost, because there would be no additional administrative burden on the agency. They, in conversations with Ms. Starr, she said that there is no change to the disclosure laws for that bill, so that they, the Department of Revenue, would not be able to share any return information with the Campaign Finance Board.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, and I apologize, Ms. Templin, for putting you on the spot. I should have asked for Ms. Starr to actually come forward to speak to that piece. But I do have another piece, too, of concern with this and whether it can truly be implemented. And I'm wondering if Ms. Starr is not here, I'd like to go to that question as well.
Ms. Starr, are you here? I do not see her.
Or anyone from the Department of Revenue.
Great, Mr. Cummings is here. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cummings, have you gotten any feedback from Ms. Starr or the other folks from the Department of Revenue on how this would be implemented given the current prohibition on disclosing this information?
Mr. Cummings.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I do not... no. I don't have the answer to that question, and I can go back. I know that Ms. Starr has been looking into this, and she has been trying to determine the impact. And as drafted, this would not have an impact, a fiscal impact on the Department of Revenue. So this is not anything that would be impacted. You know, if there were changes to other statutes, there may be. But as written, this would have no department impact. But in terms of the kind of more in-depth analysis, I don't. But as written, this would not impact.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With that and having that out there, I think that that's problematic. I'd like to hear from Ms. Starr to get an opinion from the Department of Revenue on truly whether this could be implemented or not. Given the disclosure laws that we have in place, I don't think that we can. But then I also had a question for Mr. Michaels. In this, how would this language apply to C Corporation?
Mr. Mike.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the way I read it, it essentially would require, if a C Corporation is making a political contribution, it would essentially be required to, in one way or another, make sure that the value of that campaign contribution was somehow reported to, so that it would be income to an individual. So, for example, that could happen because it was imputed wages to an employee of the corporation, or that it was a dividend or distribution to a shareholder of the corporation. Because essentially, if you read the language of the bill, that's essentially what it says on line, for example, the same language is repeated twice in both sections of the bill, but if you look on like line 1.12 through 1.14, it says that the income to be required to report it as income on an individual income tax return.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, so I mean, this bill doesn't—you couldn't apply it to a C corporation because they're not reporting it as individual income tax return. So there's two points where this bill is not—it cannot be implemented. So if we want to go ahead and push this thing through, I predict that in 2014 we'll be coming back to undo this because it doesn't work. This is not a feasible bill; it doesn't work.
Well, and, you know, I guess I'll just say, you know, my intent is to go ahead and you know, we'll take the vote to see if it's going to go to the general register. If it's, you know, I hope people will work with Representative Atkins if they have issues with it. You know, you're right. If it doesn't work, it just won't work. And then I guess folks who don't like the bill will be happy because it didn't work anyhow. But, you know, I don't know that, and I would want to learn more about that. But this really... We had the hearing on this, and, you know, deadline is tomorrow, so Representative Atkins asked me if we could take it off the table and send it to the calendar, and I said yes, because it's, you know, I think we all know it's questionable if it should have ever been here in the first place, so I'm going to honor his request that we at least take that vote to send it to the general register. Representative Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, in that case, I would ask for a roll call, I think, on this one.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Davids, did you have a comment as well?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And we've heard from Assistant Commissioner Cummings, and we might want to hear from Commissioner Starr. With that being said, this bill, I mean, just listening to Mr. Michael and his explanation, that was kind of spooking me just a bit. Just logistically, and I don't want to kill a bill just because we're playing the deadline game here, but since this is in taxes, would the deadline apply to this? Because couldn't we work on it here? Because this is looks like a faulty bill to me. I don't think it works either. Since it's here in the tax committee, I don't think the deadline really applies, does it, Madam Chair?
You know, I think if we put it in the omnibus tax bill, it would stay alive, but I was not planning to do that.
Well, Madam Chair...
If I thought it should be there, it'd be in there already.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. But since it's in the committee, it lives. Things live in the tax committee.
I don't know about that. Because if this shouldn't have come here, because I honestly am not sure it ever should have come here, but it did, and we had a hearing, and now we have it, I would rather move it out of here because I think it's questionable whether it was ever... should be here in the first place, but that's me. I think we all look at it a little differently. So, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Have we had, I mean, I don't know if the public would want to testify on this, or have we had, it was in the committee, but I don't know that we actually had public testimony on this.
Well, you were chairing, Mr. Chair, so I'm not sure, but
so we had a temporary
it did have,
chair.
You know, it did have a hearing in elections and government operations, and that is where it should be, and it passed out of those.
And you're the chair, but I think if we don't act on it right now and get some more information, I think it lives. I don't want to kill it because of deadlines.
I don't know if it lives if we don't ever intend to send it out in another way, if it's not in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So I, you know, I'm open to more people interpreting that question. Is there anything else? Otherwise, we're Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, I see that we have Ms. Starr here.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, Representative, members of the committee.
I think Representative Anderson has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Starr, under this, would the Department of Revenue be giving up information to the Campaign Finance Board?
Madam Chair,
tax returns in particular.
Madam Chair, Representative, our attorneys have reviewed our disclosure laws, and as I believe expressed in the fiscal note, because of disclosure laws, the Department of Revenue, as this bill is currently drafted, would not be allowed to reveal or disclose information to the Campaign Finance or Public Disclosure and Public Disclosure Board.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Starr. That basically nullifies this entire bill, because as you have on this bill, it says on line 1.12, it says as income on individual income tax returns, that only the funds that have been reported or will be required to be reported as income on individual income tax returns. There is no way for the Campaign Finance Board to actually implement this bill. They can't give the information, so the Campaign Finance Board cannot implement this bill. So why would this bill move forward? Well, we would be giving them direction to do something that is completely not possible for them to do.
Well, I guess if that's a question for me, I will tell you, you know, this bill, and again, is not a tax bill. It shouldn't be here. I don't think it ever should have come here, but it had a hearing and it's here. And those kind of questions, I think, must have come up, is my guess, in the Committee on Elections and Government Operations, and they both passed it out. But I think if the will of the body of the whole is on the floor, that it's, as you say, unworkable, or, you know, if they share your belief, Representative Anderson, they'll vote it down if it's ever brought to a vote on the House floor. But in my estimation, it doesn't belong here. And the next step for it to move it along is to, there's no cost to it, so it doesn't go to Ways and Means, and it's been to the appropriate committee, so it's general register. So that's still my preference. Is, you know, we all know plenty of bills make it to the general register and are never brought up after that. So I hear what you're saying, you oppose it, but I really would like to move this along. Other questions? Star or anybody else? Okay, if not, we have a roll call has been requested.
Lincheski?
Yes.
Loeffler? Davids?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Anzels?
Yes.
Garrett?
No.
Benson?
Yes.
Carlson?
Yes.
Dabney?
Yes.
Draskowski? Earhart?
Yes.
Garofalo?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Lesh? Liebling? Lilly?
Yes.
Loon? Mac, Marquardt?
Yes.
Myra?
No.
Paymar? Pepin? Runbeck?
No.
Schoen?
Yes.
Simonson?
Yes.
Slocum?
Yes.
Sellers?
There being 12 ayes and 7 nays, the bill has passed and sent to the general register. Thank you, members. So now we're going to go back to the omnibus tax bill. We've done all the public testimony, so that's back before us, and we can start on amendments. And if it's all right, I'd like to ask the staff to do the author's amendment first. I guess I have never moved the delete all. So I need to do that. Thank you. So I'm going to move, so we formally have it before, the A14-1023 to amend House File 3167 to put the actual DE in front of us. And then I'll ask staff to do the author's amendment, which is the H317-08, 0A18. And do we all have that in our packets? No, it's being passed out, so we'll hang on for that. Thank you. And who's going to walk through that? So hang on just a second.
Okay. Interpretive dance may be the only way people will be interested.
So Do I have two amendments? Oh, I don't know if I'm doing that one. So we'll wait on that. Do I need this or is this garbage? Garbage. Well, do you need it? Does she need it? Oh. Okay, does everyone have it? All right, so if we could go through the A18 amendment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, on the amendment, lines 1 through 5 are corrections to the firefighter relief payments, the correction that these were suggested by pension commission staff, just to make it clear, for example, that the corporations that are getting this are ones who actually get the aid currently. Section or lines 1.6 through the bottom of the bill down to the bottom of the amendment down to 1.26 are changes in the county and city notification of pending applications for utility property tax exemptions that were worked out between the Department of Revenue staff and the city representatives. On line 1.27 over to the next page through line 0.21, these are changes to make all of the June accelerated rates, percentage rates consistent. Line 2.2 is to extend the sales tax exemption for port authorities to the port authorities that are under special laws. And 2.3 changes of reference again to counties and cities again with regard to port authorities. I'm sorry, with the library. Well, that's the library exemption. And lines 2.4 through 2.8 are the changes in the angel credit that the committee earlier discussed. Lines 2.9 through 2.13 are changes to the income tax exemption for military pay, adding an effective date and clarifying the exclusion. Line 2.14 is just a cross-reference correction. 2.15, there was an extra word that was in the bill, and again, 2.16 is a cross-reference correction. 2.17 is adding to the unsessioned bill a repeal of the sales tax amnesty provision that was part of the U.S. The SSUTA provision that is now obsolete.
Okay, discussion on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those say nay. The A18 is adopted. And then I'm just going to ask staff, does that cover the technical amendments to the bill? No. Okay. All right. So amendments from anyone are in order. With that, Representative Garofalo. Yes, please. And Mr. Beltrandi, if you can pass out Representative Garofalo's amendments.
I can do it.
Yeah, it's right there.
That's great.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And first of all, Madam Chair, let me apologize because I think some members of the committee, not the whole committee, was here last night, and so some members are going to get, they're going to hear things twice that I discussed last night about concerns of this section of the bill. I have the privilege of serving on both the Energy and the Tax Committees, and so I have the benefit of being able to understand the tax interactions as well as the energy policy. And what's contained in the bill right now is a replacement of how property taxes are paid on large solar installations. And what's contained in the bill right now is a replacement of how property taxes are paid on large solar installations. And the way the advocates presented this to Representative Dabney, and I've spoken with Representative Dabney about this both yesterday and today, is they presented it to him as sort of a revenue neutral, not that big of a deal. We're just doing things in a different way, shifting it from a property tax to a production amount. And that is not what this bill, as it does right now. What my amendment does is it strikes the provisions in the bill and replaces it with a study of solar energy taxation that the Commissioner of Revenue will conduct to actually do these things and have it be done the right way. Very quickly, let me just please explain what the current provisions in this bill do. Right now, it will allow, when solar installations take place, the classification rate will stay the same. And is Mr. Hines here? Where did he go? I just wanted to clarify, yesterday, if you could come to the table, yesterday I had brought up a hypothetical about if a business purchased a solar plot, the classification rates in this bill are supposed to stay the same. I've inadvertently narrowly focused that. In the event that somebody leased these out, so in other words, someone has an egg homestead parcel of land, and they put 12 acres of solar panels out on their land, under the bill as it's designed right now, would they maintain the egg homestead designation?
Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, Representative Groffel, yes, I believe they would, unless that was the whole farm, but yes.
Okay, thank you very much. And so I just wanted to clarify that from our discussions we had yesterday. So the first thing this bill does is it maintains the classification rates when you put solar panels out on these facilities. And many times the advocates for this bill referenced our wind statutes and the wind production tax as a template for this, but this really doesn't work well. Let me cite a couple of reasons why. Number one, when you put a windmill in the middle of a farm, you are still able to farm around it. The footprint of that is very small. A 2-megawatt windmill is not going to affect, you know, with the possible exception of irrigation, it's not going to affect the land that much. However, when you put a 2-megawatt solar installation in, that's 12 acres. It is 6 acres for each megawatt of solar that is installed. On the footprint side. So first of all, what this does is it maintains that classification. It's going to be listed as egg, even though it's clearly not egg. And as you heard from nonpartisan staff, in many instances when they lease this, it's going to maintain the preferred egg homestead designation, even though it's not the property is not a homestead, which I'm not aware of anywhere in statute that we do. I've highlighted the difference between wind and solar in terms of the amount of space and their land use. But the third thing is, under current law right now, we only exempt the value of the solar panels. The infrastructure behind it is subject to the personal property tax. This bill strips all of that away, so there is no personal property tax on these items. And this is incredibly important. Just today, the Public Utilities Commission decided to have Xcel go out for bids on $250 million worth of solar installations. And this, none of that personal property is going to be subject to tax under the bill as it is presented to us. The fourth thing I would point out about why this is different from wind and solar is that wind has a higher capacity factor. So some of our windmills have a 50% capacity factor. If you have a 2-megawatt windmill, it will generate electricity 50% of the time. Solar, and the absolute most optimistic scenarios in Minnesota, is about an 18 to 20% capacity factor. So in addition to having a larger footprint on the land, in addition to generating less revenue on the production side, the personal property tax is not going to apply to this. And Madam Chair and members, this is not that big of a deal right now because there just isn't that much of this stuff. But when you combine it with the 1.5% solar mandate that's in law right now, you're talking about 400 megawatts of solar that's categorized as this that you are now exempting and putting into these preferences. And Madam Chair and members, I am supremely confident that if that 400 megawatts of solar was installed right now, there is no way you guys would put this provision into law. So I've spoken with Representative Dabney about it. He's shared with me his opinions on it. I'm just trying to highlight this for members. I would hope as the bill goes forward, if we decide not to adopt my amendment, that you at least consider this, because this is the kind of thing that, I mean, it's a mistake. I mean, the way it was presented to us was that this is supposed to be revenue neutral. It's nowhere near that. In the jurisdictions where these panels are going to be at, these large installations, are property poor districts where you're going to be prohibiting a growth of property tax revenue and tax capacity in these communities. And that's not the way it was presented to the author. It's not the way it was presented to this committee. And as everyone knows, when we goof around with capacity factor, the tax classification rates, we're not cutting anyone's taxes. We're just shifting. That's all we're doing. And so I'm hoping the majority party will just take a second look at this and think about it. But this is a problem, and I would hope you'd adopt the amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo, for clearly communicating your concerns yesterday and also coming to me on the floor today. I do appreciate that. We just have some different points of view here. As to the lease issue, yes, if the farm is homesteaded and someone comes in and leases some percentage of that and places solar panels on that, it will continue to maintain that classification rate, just as if I put solar panels on somebody else's roof, on Representative Earhart's roof, and I lease that roof space, he doesn't suddenly lose the homestead property classification there. So the link here is that we're going to treat it the same way. And as long as that farm is homesteaded, that farm continues to receive the homestead property class benefits. If the farmer moves off the land or if the utility purchases the land, then the classification would lose, or they would lose the homestead classification. I anticipate, you know, Representative Garofalo, you've made quite a bit about the size of these, and you're absolutely right. You know, 12 acres is, I'm a city guy. I don't think in acres very well, but I get 12 is a double-digit number, and that means a lot. Yeah. But it's less than a megawatt, because that's a really, really big amount, Representative Zellers. So there we go. But I anticipate that over time, maybe not next year, but maybe 5 years or 10 years from now, we'll be able to get that same amount of energy off of much smaller areas. 1993, I bought my first computer. The cell phone I carry in my pocket today is both far more powerful and a whole lot smaller. And that's just the natural trajectory of technology. And we've got some very good Minnesota-based companies that are coming up with more efficient solar energy panels and structures that are shrinking the size of these things and increasing the effectiveness of them. This is an exchange. Right now, they may pay property taxes, but they're not paying a production tax. We're making an exchange. It's a diverse revenue opportunity for these local communities that's reliable and predictable. And that's a good thing. Reliable and predictable are both good things when it comes to revenues, particularly for all of our towns, but particularly in greater Minnesota. You know, the income of farmers went down 78% last year. Down 78%. Increasing the strain on them in paying property taxes while property valuations in farm country continue to go up. I think there's a number of reasons. Representative Hortman and I have had several conversations. She's a co-author on the bill that is, you know, represented here because she sees this as a positive step forward in solar development in Minnesota. I'd ask for a no vote.
Further discussion?
Thank you, and I'll just complete on this. First of all, Representative Dabney, you mentioned that you compared this to roof space, and the difference is that if you or I put solar panels on the roof of our house, we're not changing the use of the house. It's still a home. Second of all, you referenced the homestead thing, but I want to emphasize to everybody, even for that land that is not homesteaded, it's going to maintain the agricultural classification, which I've looked through the classification rates. I can't find another example of this is where when it's clearly not agriculture. It cannot be used. It is inoperable for agricultural use, and it's maintaining that classification. Third and finally is the issue, Representative Dabney, of reliability and predictability. That's the exact opposite of what this bill does. In the event of heavy snowfall, solar panel value is significantly diminished. In addition, seasonal rates, there's times where the sun is setting at 4:30 in Minnesota, and it's reducing the production. Again, solar has a much lower capacity factor than wind. Why this applies to windmills in Lake Benton, and it's a good model. But if you look at the price that people who own wind energy are getting paid and the amount of the production tax on that, now take a look at the solar side and look at the amount of money they're getting paid. The percentages don't match up. This is not apples and apples. This is not oranges and oranges. And I would just ask people when they, regardless of the results of this amendment today, to take a closer look at this and watch what it means. I want to emphasize just today on one series of projects, the Public Utilities Commission okayed $250 million. None of that is going to be allowed to be applied to under the personal property tax that under the bill as it's statute right now. And that is a small portion of this. So there's going to be lots more money in this, and it's going to be an unintended shift away. And it really, given the fact that there's $175 million of state subsidies for Made in Minnesota and solar subsidies that we've already passed, that was passed last session, I genuinely, I do not understand why the majority would do this. So I would just ask for your support, but I recognize the world I live in as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Okay, we're going to take a vote then. All those in favor of the Groppo amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
And Representative Leland just walked in. The amendment does not prevail. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Next amendment, we have the David's amendment I have listed. Do you have an amendment?
We have two.
Okay, I just have David's amendment. You can give us the number.
They're good.
Okay, they're good?
Yeah, really good. I'm not sure which one we have.
There's a 04 and a 15 is what we have written down here. I don't know. Mr. Beltrandi. Whatever he wants.
That's 4C. Yeah.
You can pass them both out.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the H3170A15 amendment, but I think it needs to be going to HF number 3167 we're working off of, I believe.
3167. And, you know, I apologize for that. We thought we were, Representatives, or Senator Skoy and I have two bills that were on reserve where we were each other's authors, and we had to switch it, so it's a little confusing. But we'll, however they're drafted, we'll do them as intended by the author.
Okay,
so
thank you, Madam Chair. Now, what this one does, very simply, is, and I want to thank Representative Dabney for the in language on the 4C, that is not taken out of statute, but and correct me if I'm not updated on something here, but what this amendment would do is it would bring back in to current law, this is not new law, it would bring back into current law, basically from what the way the bill is drafted, we'd be putting the Class 4C 7 and 8, and that's the non-commercial aircraft storage hangars, the 4C 9, which is owner-occupied bed and breakfast, and this one I'm extremely concerned about. I've notified the folks in Lanesboro what's going on here, and I really find it, I don't understand why we're doing this to these people. We're talking about going from 0.5 to 3.0, and it shuts them down. It shuts them down. Their profit margins, or the emails I'm going to hear, their profit margins cannot absorb their property taxes going up by six times. So it's the and this legislature designated Lanesboro as the bed and breakfast capital of Minnesota. It has more bed and breakfast than any town or city in the state of Minnesota. This would simply be devastating. And we know it's not going to become law. We know that. So we can play the game here and have it go to conference, but it's not going to happen. So I think we should just accept this amendment here and leave the law on 4C the way it currently is, put these back in. It has a seasonal restaurants, and then Majority Leader Box provision, a Class 4C 11 marinas providing public access to a lake or river. So I think we know this is never going to happen. Let's just clean it up now. And I'm not going to ask for a roll call or anything, but I would really appreciate your support. I know I do have some support on the other side of the aisle on this. I hope it's enough. So I would, as I said, I'll move the A15 amendment, Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Davids. I'd oppose the amendment. We have the highest number of property tax classifications in the country. 55 or 56. You've heard me before. I think the nearest competitor is South Dakota, which has about a dozen. It gives us an incredibly complex property tax system that is difficult for people to understand, and I don't blame them. And each one of these classifications means that homeowners pay higher taxes. Some businesses are favored, some are penalized. Some are put in the position of actually having to subsidize their competition. You've got the restaurant on the lake, you've got the more desirable location, you also get a property tax cut, and the restaurant across the street they're paying higher property taxes and helping to subsidize their competitor directly across the street. These are little used classifications. There's very few properties that qualify, but where they do, they're pushing up the property taxes for everybody else. As Representative Garofalo was talking about on his amendment, it's always about shifts. And I would ask that, Representative Davids, you know that property tax reform is hard. You eliminated the homestead market value credit. That was hard. It was hard on Minnesotans. This is going to be different in that it will result in reduced taxes for the overwhelming number of Minnesotans. It'll help clean up our property tax system, move us forward on some reform coming out of the property tax working group recommendations in baby steps. And I would ask for your opposition to the amendment. Thank you.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if Representative Dabney or maybe staff could help me out here. By wiping out an industry here, which is what we're doing, especially with the bed and breakfast, how much would the average taxpayer save in Minnesota by wiping out this industry?
Who would you like to
maybe Ms. Dalton or...
Ms. Dalton?
She doesn't want it. Steve Hines, maybe.
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Hines, if he could. You know, the question is, by wiping out an industry here, the bed and breakfast industry... So, Madam Chair and Mr. Hines, how much, by wiping out the bed and breakfast industry, how much are we going to save the average taxpayer in Minnesota?
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative, or Madam Chair, Representative Davids, there's the tax on bed and breakfast might be... Just looking at a very rough table here, on the order of $22 million, 1% of that, $220,000. So, and the tax would be about doubled. So, you're in the neighborhood of $250,000 of benefit to other taxpayers. Higher taxes on bed and breakfast under this bill.
And, Madam Chair, and
therefore
Mr. Hines...
lower on everybody else.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Madam Chair and Mr. Hines, how many taxpayers do we have in Minnesota to spread that $220,000 over?
Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, we have 1.5 million homesteads, and I don't know how many total properties there are, certainly 20. Over 2 million, something along those lines.
So, Madam Chair and Mr. Hines, we're talking 10 cents per taxpayer. So I'm going to get a button made up says pay 10 cents and save an industry. Because that's what we're doing here. And the people in Lanesboro are really concerned right about now. If you go into my email account, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do and why we would put people for this when it's never going to happen. Senator Bach is going to roll this out so fast you're not going to know what hit you. In conference committee. I mean, get on the Bachmobile because it's, like I said yesterday, I'll tell you what, sometimes you just have to say thank God for the Senate because they will correct this outrageous wiping out of an industry. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm changing my mind here. Let's mix it up a little bit. Let's have a roll call vote on this, please.
Okay, a roll call has been requested. Representative Van Zyls.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Dabney, you and I have had a conversation of late. And I told you that when I see language involving marinas providing public access to lakes and rivers, I think of home. When I see seasonal restaurants located on a lake, that's home. When I see owner-occupied bed and breakfast facilities, it's Lanesboro, but it's also home. And I also told you that there are no streets and there are no competitors. These are businesses in rural, sparsely populated communities on lakes and rivers that are recreational oriented, and it's not worth it.
I guess it's worth it to the assessor. We heard the assessor, and from Ramsey County, I might add. And to him, it makes life quite a bit easier. But to real people trying to eke out a living in northern Minnesota on these beautiful lakes and rivers, I think this is a little more important than we might think. So I'm going to be joining Representative Davids in supporting his amendment and call it parochial, if you will. That's what it is. And I'm sure you understand.
Representative Earhart.
I think they're spreading this, Madam Chair, over the whole state. And I don't think that occurs. It will spread over the local jurisdiction when this comes off. Am I correct?
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, that's correct, certainly the tax, although I guess one issue with a lot of these classifications that are being eliminated under Representative Davney's proposals, right now they pay no state tax, and they would pay a state general tax under if they had to go CI, so then there would be some benefit to CI state property taxpayers statewide, but generally it is locally shared tax, that's correct.
In other words,
Representative Earhart, can you lean into the mic a little bit there?
Yeah. Okay. Madam Chair, in other words, Representative Davis has to redo his arithmetic. Probably would be at least 20 cents per person in his local jurisdiction.
Thank you. Further discussion on the Davids Amendment.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Davids.
If I could, and I just want to be clear, I have not talked to Representative Davney about this. I'm doing this completely behind his back.
Okay, Representative Davney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to put this in some context for members, I introduced House File 1884. This language was in it on the January pre-session introduction date so that it was out there, so that people in the various industries and property classifications could know about it. And to date, zero marina owners have contacted me. Zero B&B owners have contacted me. Zero restaurant owners have contacted me. I have just today received a letter expressing concern from the Airplane and Pilots Association. I don't have the name right. But there doesn't seem to be concern amongst the industries. None of them have contacted me outside of some concern expressed by the airline pilots. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. The reason they haven't contacted Representative Davney is because they've all contacted me, and I've assured them that I'm on the Bachmobile on this one.
Further discussion? If not, we're going to call the roll call. Representative Earhart.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm wondering if Representative Davids couldn't get some Rochester to share some of their sales tax money to offset whatever it is.
Madam Chair.
Davids.
Madam Chair, I would accept that as a friendly amendment. But Madam Chair, Representative Chair Liebling and I are on quite a few bills together this year, and I didn't want to upset her in any way.
Okay. If that's it, we're going to go ahead and call for... Is everybody okay? Everybody's... Okay, no one's on the list. We're going to call the roll.
Minchesky?
Yes. Or I'm sorry, is this the Davids Amendment? No. Sorry, correction. I'm voting no on the Davids Amendment. No.
Loeffler?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Anzels?
Yes.
Barrett?
Yes.
Benson? Carlson?
No. Excuse me. No.
Davney?
No.
Drazkowski?
Yes.
Earhart?
No.
Garofalo? Hansen?
No.
Lesh?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Lilly?
No.
Loon?
Yes.
Mac?
Yes.
Marquardt?
No.
Myra?
Yes.
Paymar?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Runbeck?
Yes.
Schoen? Simonson?
No.
Slocum?
No.
Zellers?
Aye.
have an issue in Cambridge with a state-run facility about 10 months without a license and entry.
There being 12 ayes and 15 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further amendments. Representative Lilly, do you have one?
Madam Chair.
I'm so sorry. You have another one.
You can take Lilly's first if you'd like.
No. I forgot about that. Representative Davids, please.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. The 04 amendment was brought to me by Representative Anderson P. And I'm going to try and describe it, and if staff, if I say something wrong, please correct it. Basically, what happens if someone owes the Department of Revenue and is delinquent on their taxes, if they're a bar, for example, or a restaurant that has a liquor license, they can't buy any alcohol at all if they're on that list, and that's fine. They owe the Department of Revenue. I get it. Now, what this amendment is supposed to say, it says that if they have entered into an agreement with the Department of Revenue and they're making their payments, they can get their name off the posting and resume business. Now, I believe that's what it says. And you know, if they're, one might say, well, you know, they'll do an agreement and then they won't follow through with it. And I want to make sure that if they do not follow through their agreement, that they'd be put back on posted, and so that they would not be able to buy liquor and so forth. But for the folks that enter an agreement with the Department of Revenue and honor that agreement, I think they should be able to resume their business and keep it going. This has happened in Representative Anderson P's district. It's happened in my district. It's probably happened in everybody's district here. And we're called, and we want to try and get them so they can keep their business open and keep their 20 or 30 employees going. So maybe Ms. Dalton, is this kind of your thing, or who does this?
Ms. Dalton, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids and members of the committee, Representative Davids explained it fairly well. It does exactly what he said it does. If they have a written agreement and they continue to make the payments under the written agreement on a timely fashion, then they do not get onto this list where they are prohibited from making purchases of liquor, essentially. However, if they miss a payment, then they immediately go back on the list.
Okay, discussion. Don't know anything about this. Somebody must have thought about this. Representative Loeffler and then Anderson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. This is a new area of our policies, and I'm just wondering if we're setting a precedent for other places where people are late in paying their taxes, or if this is consistent with other penalty provisions we have for other types of businesses. The only business mentioned was one with an alcohol license, but how does this affect that? We have all kinds of licensed businesses, and how does that fit with how we handle other things?
Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, and I may defer to Joel Michael on this, but my understanding is this is a unique penalty that only applies kind of in this situation. If you are a restaurant or a bar owner and you become delinquent on paying your taxes, you're no longer allowed to buy liquor.
That's interesting. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually had this happen in December to one of the establishments in my legislative district, and it happened to happen right before their ability to buy liquor was going to happen right before New Year's. And as you can imagine, that would just, we as a state wouldn't have gotten our revenue because it would have sunk them, essentially. So, yeah, this is an issue.
Does Ms. Starr, is she still here? Maybe she wants to talk to us. I don't know if you're tracking this. I've never thought about this before. Ms. Starr, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe the testimony so far is correct. This is a unique posting system that is about liquor taxes, and the amendment does what it says it does. I don't have a comment about the administrability about it. I don't believe the department has reviewed the language, but we certainly will.
Okay. Anyone else? Representative Davids, I guess I just ask you, so if we were to put this on between now and the floor, can you talk to the department about it a little bit, make sure everything would work.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll talk to Representative Davini and the department. I will.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, on the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The amendment's adopted. Thank you, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Lilly.
Madam Chairwoman and members, the 820 amendment is a latecomer here to the game. I don't serve on Representative Chair Daphne's committee, and so it's error on my part and my communities and of North St. Paul. We have a TIF that's coming towards an end. We didn't have a lot of activity, to be quite honest, with the economy downturning, and now we've got some interest. We have a new city manager that just kind of is coming on, so I feel a little bit like Representative Franson yesterday, but I don't want to. But I'm the one that's guilty. I've worked with both the chairs on the House side, and my apologies to the minority members. It's kind of a last-minute development, and I ask for your consideration. I've asked if Mr. Michael can kind of explain what we're trying to do here for our city. But thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. And Mr. Michael, could you tell the committee, and it was a late introduction bill, what the bill as introduced was proposing and what the Lilly Amendment does that's different than the late entrant bill? Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, essentially what the bill did was to allow the City of North St. Paul an additional amount of time to treat a parcel on which there was a building that the city or the developer demolished. That was a substandard building, to treat that as a blighted parcel for purposes of the redevelopment test. Under general law, there's a rule that says that if you create a redevelopment district, or you're planning to create a redevelopment district, and one of the ways that you can create a redevelopment, or the only way you can create a redevelopment district, is to have a certain percentage of the parcels in the area of the district be occupied by substandard buildings. And what occasionally happens is the city will want to demolish the building before they actually have a developer, before they have a firm plan for what's going to happen on that parcel. And of course, if you do that, then under the redevelopment test, you can no longer count that parcel as being a blighted parcel, as occupied by a substandard building. What the general law does is it says you have a 3-year period after you demolish that building to continue to count that parcel as blighted. What North St. Paul's bill requested was to have an additional 3.5 years to count that as a blighted parcel. What Representative Lilly's bill does is to give them 2.5 additional years, not the 3.5 additional years that the city requested. The second part of the bill is introduced, which is not part of Representative Lilly's amendment. One of the rules under the general law is that even though you've demolished the building, for purposes of the original value of the tax increment district, you have to continue to count that value of the building as part of the frozen tax base. The bill as introduced said, not only are we going to have extra time to count this as a blighted parcel, but we're also not going to take the building that we demolished into account in setting the frozen or original value. That part of it is not in Representative Lilly's amendment.
Okay, discussion on the amendment. Discussion. Representative Davini.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, thank you for persisting for your community. But I think we've worked together on this to get this into a form that's acceptable. We do recognize that while the recession may be over, real estate tends to be a lagging indicator, for lack of a better term, and so there's a number of places that we've tried to respond to this session that are looking for just a little bit more because they've started a process and then have not been able to get it to the point of completion. Here, North St. Paul is one of those, and we can do this, I think. So, thank you.
Further discussion. On the A20, then, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. the amendments adopted. Further amendments?
Thank you.
Are there further amendments?
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson. And I'm aware of one from Representative Dabney and one from Simonson and Lesh. And that's, and Earhart has one too. So, I mean, I don't have these.
And Barrett as well.
Okay. So, Representative Garofalo, you have one that's passed out already?
We're passing it out.
Okay, great. Let's go with Representative Garofalo, see what he's got. And then I have a Dabney one in front of me. So, and Representative Lesh, yes, we know you have another committee, and we can even, okay, we can even offer people's amendments if they can't be here. We know people are voting in other places. Representative Garofalo moves the A-12.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This was in regards to Article 3, Section 13 of the bill, with regards to the exclusion of certain nonprofits. What we're doing is we're changing the law in the current bill right now so that the first $20,000 of gross annual receipts from an organization from fundraising are not subject so there's an exemption for it. And what my bill simply does is, in the spirit of the House DFL's plan to put minimum wage on inflation, it takes this measurement, puts it on inflation as well. And so I'd ask for your support.
Well, thank you. Representative Garofalo, can I just check, and we'll go to discussion. I want to ask staff if, is this was the provision that the governor, I believe, and Representative Wills worked on? Is that correct? Ms. Dalton, can you... So you would be adding inflation to Representative Wills and the governor's proposal?
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, I believe that this $10,000 provision is from last time it was updated, 1985, is that right? And so this just puts it in there so that it stays the same going forward.
Okay, Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo characterized it. And yes, this hasn't changed since 1985, so this would be a way of not having to revisit this every 20 years or so.
That would be nice. Further discussion on the A-12. Is there any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The A-12 is adopted. Thank you. Let's see. And I have a Dabney one. And I'm not sure if... Do people have the A-13 in front of them? Because we could take that.
We do.
Yes. We do have the A-13? Okay. So, and then after that, we have a Barrett. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll get yours copied, Representative Barrett. But let's go to the Dabney A-13. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A-13 amendment. This is a more technical change to the study area for the stipends for recruitment and retention of volunteer firefighters and EMS. It targets the area a little bit more, brings the cost down, shaves the cost a little bit, and I'm hoping that it increases the validity of the data that we get. With that, I'd ask for members' support.
Can I ask you, Representative Dabney, so the author of this bill, is they're aware of this and supportive?
Thank you very much, yes. Yes on both.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Okay, so that was Representative Savick's volunteer firefighter pilot retention credit for volunteer firefighters. Okay, discussion to the A-13. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The A-13 is adopted. Let's see. Do we do the Garofalo? Do you want to do the A-9, Representative Garofalo? I have that one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A-9 amendment.
Okay, so do folks have the A-9? I think we do. Okay, great. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, a good provision that's in this bill is with regards to the June accelerated sales tax. We are bumping up, I think this is the Dabney provision. I don't have my spreadsheet in front of me. But we're bumping up the amount that's excluded from $125,000 to $250,000 of gross sales. So they're not subject to the factors of the June accelerated sales tax. What this does is it continues it forward to $250,000 in the next fiscal year, and then the year beyond that to $375,000. And then beyond, no, excuse me, Representative Dabney takes it to $250,000. I take it to $375,000. Then the year after that to $500,000. And so it's just a way of, you know, automatically whittling down what has been a shift in our accounting procedures since, I think, the early to mid-'80s. And so, again, it would reduce the amount of businesses that are subjected to the June accelerated sales tax, and I'd ask for member support.
Okay. Just for some clarification, if I can, Representative Garofalo, I'm trying to think through the impact on the spreadsheet, and if Ms. Templin's here, because we all have our spreadsheet, I think we'd look at page 2, line 9, If I'm following this correctly, of the spreadsheet, page 2, line 9, the Dabney bill as Representative Garofalo was just talking about, shows us the price tag for that provision right now. And I'm just wondering, I know you wouldn't have an estimate, Ms. Templin, but could you tell us, is the Garofalo Amendment only affect fiscal 16 and 17? And would you have any thoughts on how that might change the tails? Or maybe I'm not understanding the amendment correctly, but Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, with the description of the amendment, first of all, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff, from the description of the amendment by Representative Garofalo, the thresholds would be increasing in what is relative to the bill. The threshold would change from $120,000 to $250,000, and just looking at that provision in the bill, the total number of entities paying the June accelerated tax is about 4,800, and with the bill, the change in the bill, about 2,500 less entities would be paying the June accelerated payment. With the threshold changes proposed in the amendment, the number of entities paying the tax would also go down further, and that would have an additional revenue impact. And at this point, I do not have an estimate.
Is that in 14 and 15, though? I'm just trying to think through, because we have a target to make for that. So, Representative Garofalo?
I'm sure, and I apologize for not noticing this when it was drafted. It looks like the 3, the 4, and the 5 on 2013, 2014, and 2015. I think that's... No? Tell me why I'm wrong.
Ms. Dalton, I will be honest. I'm just trying to figure out right now if we can even do it in our committee target for what we've been assigned in. So, Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, the reason these numbers always look a little funny is because when you owe liability is always determined by how much liability you had in the previous fiscal year.
Gotcha.
And so line 1.10 is actually what's in the bill right now. That is Representative Davney's. And then lines 111 and 112 are essentially the extension of it into the future years, increasing the thresholds in the out years.
Madam Chair, I apologize. Of course, staff is never wrong. Why would I ever do that? So, no, Ms. Dalton said it exactly right, that they're referencing the previous year's tax liability to determine if it's excluded. So there would be no effect in fiscal years 14 nor 15.
Ms. Dalton, do you concur on that, and Ms. Templin? If it's going to affect this biennium, I guess I'd ask members to vote against it just because it's it wouldn't fit in our committee target.
Do you have?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Is it simply a tails issue? Not that we have a lot of tails to work with either, but I know we have to hit the 103 number on the front page. Ms. Templin,
Madam Chair, the.
There would be.
Line 1.11, and I'll look to Ms. Dalton for correction.
1.11
of the amendment affects fiscal year 15 revenue.
What's in the bill?
I think she's looking at a different amendment.
Well, it says, I think what, are you saying, Ms. Templin, that line 0.11 on the A9 amendment that says for fiscal year ending in 14, that means it's a 15 cost?
Madam Chair, that is correct. That would affect June 2014, June liabilities that are paid in fiscal 15.
So what would happen, Madam Chair, is that so for those who have to make a June accelerated sales tax at the end of May in 2015, it would actually cause a loss of revenue for the state of Minnesota on a one-time basis because those revenues would be forwarded into fiscal year 16. So I was wrong that it would have an impact on this biennium. So
no.
Right?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, that is correct.
Okay, so my intent was to just provide that. So why don't we, if you can allow me, Madam Chair, since line 1.10 is already in the bill, if I understand right, if we took a 111 and 112 and just made those strike the 4, make it a 5, take the 5, strike it, make it a 6. So it would be June 30th, 2015 and June 30th, 2016. Then I believe that would address the issue and just put this into the tails. Is that correct? So, Madam Chair, can I incorporate that into my amendment?
Yes, please. So that's been incorporated by the author. I'm going to ask Representative Carlson, and we're trying to find out right now, actually, from leadership here, do we have room in the tails? Because I think members understand this provision, and we all kind of think it's a good idea. Yeah. It's just meeting a tails target and a this year target. So if we can't meet it, then I think we have to take it up in ways and means to see if, you know, if it's something that fits, I would support it. But I don't know that we can do that. Well, so Representative Carlson?
As you know, Madam Chair, the tails target is not in the budget resolution, but all the committees have one.
But I do want to set
informally to make sure that we watch the outgoing costs. So you do have a tails target. Now, I'm not sure where you are in it right
we're
now.
We're there.
So I would say it doesn't fit at this time, even though it might be good policy, it doesn't fit the tail.
We had actually had to give tails to another committee earlier. So that was part of our problem. I guess, do we have any sense of how much this would cost going forward?
Madam Chair, how about this? Why don't I withdraw the amendment, and I'll get staff to give me some estimates of what the numbers are. Because, you know, I'm thinking about this as I was looking at this as being a $16 million cost, but that actually wouldn't be accurate because we're going to be stacking. We're going to have double the sales, but I don't know what the number of businesses are between 120 and 250. Ms. Dalton, you're scowling at me like I'm wrong, but you know what I mean? That what happens right now is if you go from 125 to 250, you're not just doubling, you're actually tripling the amount of sales that would be eligible because you're including the 120 as well as the 121 to 250.
Right. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, because this is always just a one-time cost. Anytime you eliminate it, you've already paid for it in fiscal year 14. The move to $250,000.
What I'm saying, Madam Chair, and to the staff, is that if you get a new business that's going to be qualified for this exclusion, that one, if you have two businesses, one that has 120, one that has 250,
mm-hmm.
when you exclude the 120, there's a cost. Well, if you exclude a 250 business, you have twice the cost because you're excluding a larger amount of sales taxes.
Ms. Tom.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, you are correct.
That's right.
So I'll find out an estimate from staff. And if we're off the charts on this, I won't offer it. Otherwise, I'll try to approach you before the floor, and we'll see if there's something we can do.
Thank you. And so Representative Garofalo is going to withdraw that, but I think we all know where you're trying to get to, so appreciate that very much. Thank you.
And then I got a last one here.
Okay, Representative Garofalo, please.
And this is a sort of the same thing, but what it does is it just that section right now in 16A.152, we have items that are automatically paid back. And what this does is it temporarily just puts the June accelerated sales tax at the top of that list so that it can be automatically paid back. Once it's paid back, the intent is that it would be deleted from that section. And so, again, this is just something that's been on the books since the 80s. It's never going to be a higher priority than other items, but if we just put it in there temporarily now that we have the budget reserve higher, the cash flow higher, the K-12 shift at 90%. I think the airport's fund, I think we funded that. This is just a way to put that in there and make that a priority. So that was the intent of the A3 MO.
Okay, so Representative Garofalo moves the A3. And I'm going to ask Representative Carlson to talk about this a little too. I mean, I'll just tell you, initially thinking it seems that this is the work of the Ways and Means Committee to me to structure what gets paid in what order in the reserves. But, you know, Representative Garofalo, you are highlighting what, you know, is a good reminder is there are still shifts and gimmicks left yet in the state budget. Many of them have been filled back in now, but this one still is there. And it's, you know, we don't like doing this to Minnesota businesses, but I do think the Ways and Means Committee probably has a say in how we would stack the priorities as it relates to the budget reserve and the cash flow account. Representative Carlson, thoughts?
Well, Madam Chair, that's been the history of the budget reserve. I wouldn't have much to add to what you just said, but that's the work of the Ways and Means Committee generally.
So unfortunately, I'm going to encourage people to vote no, but
I heard Madam Chair, Representative Carlson said, put the amendment on and he'll take care of it in Ways and Means. That's what I heard. It's not, no? No?
Okay. Madam Chair, you wouldn't believe the number of conversations just like that I've had the last couple of years. Budget already.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment then.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo withdraws the A3. I have a Representative Barrett's A1, if he's ready for that. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Representative Barrett, how did you get the A1? How did you get the first amendment?
Well, I think, Madam Chair and members, I think it's symbolic of how good the amendment is.
Oh,
and it will be titled A1.
Representative Barrett on the A1.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, before we begin, it's not quite perfect. It's almost perfect. But if we could move an oral amendment on line 1.27 and just add an S after the word Taylor's Fall. We'd okay, like to have that plural.
Representative Barrett on moves on his A1 oral amendment to line 1.27 to add the S, Taylor's Falls. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now this is a perfect amendment, and I think you're aware of the issue. I represent Taylor's Falls in Chisago County, and this is an issue that's been brought to the legislature many times, both in a both from Democratic legislators before me and also Republican. Pete Nelson brought it many years ago, also Jeremy Kalin did. Speaks to the issue of how Taylor's Falls, being a unique community in Minnesota, right on the border of Minnesota and Wisconsin, and what we'd like to do is add that to the list of cities that also have difficulties competing with their neighboring states. So we'd like to add Taylor's Falls to the Border City Enterprise Zone Program and also the Border City Development Zone Program. Again, Chisago County, a unique position both in competing with Western Wisconsin, but also the Twin Cities here. Chris Eng, who's been down here before, the former Economic Development Administrator, has said before in committee that 18 of the 20 businesses in the Osceola, Wisconsin Industrial Park are former Minnesota companies. 18 out of 20. So they're moving over there because, for many reasons, not the least of which is a lower property tax value valuation for their commercial industrial. Mayor Mike was here a year ago. He has a completely empty but perfectly usable industrial park he'd like to get filled, and we'd like to have a little bit of help to do that. And that way we can create jobs and spur economic development in that part of our state. With that, I'd ask for your support.
Representative Marquardt, and I'm going to ask Representative Dabney if he wants to comment too, as this was part of, this is his division. Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. And I'm not going to suggest how members vote on this, but I do want to give a little bit of a history on border cities. And what happened, there was actually a study done in the early 1980s, and they looked at all of the borders with Wisconsin and Iowa and South Dakota and North Dakota. And at that time, the only border that they really saw a disparity with was with North Dakota. And hence, in 1984, the Border Cities program started between basically North Dakota and Minnesota. So I just wanted to give you that because what I do worry about... If there isn't kind of something behind it or data and that type of thing, is that you somewhat diminish the credibility of a program if it's just you're adding here or there. Like I said, I'm not going to suggest the area I represent benefits greatly from border cities. I totally understand what Taylor Falls could be facing there, and what I'm hearing the evidence from Representative Barrett is facing. And so I'm just wondering if there's even something else on that, or I don't know how you do it for sure and just keep everything, you know, based on studies and based on things. Otherwise, we could have, you know, all sorts of cities adding to the program, and then it kind of reduces its credibility. So, like I said, I'm not suggesting a vote one way or the other. So just those comments.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Marquardt, for exploring the history that was data-driven. And studied before developing the Border Cities program. I've got some concerns about this. The Representative Barrett, to his credit, did introduce a bill, but we didn't hear it. So this hasn't had the sort of public testimony and transparency and discussion that it deserves if we were to go this way. What we do know is that property taxes are much higher in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's an expensive place to live, to recreate, and to work. And also, the economy in Minnesota is much stronger. I haven't looked at the data recently, but I know that there's a number of measures that show that Wisconsin has lagged and is continuing to lag on coming out of the recession compared to Minnesota. And businesses tend to like to settle where there's good business going on. And between Wisconsin and Minnesota, it's very clearly Minnesota that is that. So I will be voting no on this amendment for those reasons. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Barrett, and then Schoen. Representative sure. Barrett.
Thank you, and thank you, Chair Marquardt and Representative Dabney. Just to talk about, you had mentioned the year 1984, and that was the year that this was created for good reasons. Back in 1984, me and my fellow teammates on our football team in high school won the state championship in football. And in 2014, I could probably not run 50 yards. So between that period of time, things change. And so I would hope that this program would change with the times as well. With that, I'll probably stop while I'm ahead and encourage a yes vote.
Representative Sean.
Madam Chair, can someone tell me, does this exist on the Wisconsin-Minnesota border at all right now then, this program?
No, it does not. No. Mr. Hines, do you want to? Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Sean, no, there are no border city zones along the Wisconsin border. There, Laverne received a temporary designation. But originally, when the original Border City Enterprise Zone was created, then Commissioner of, I think what was called Trade and Economic Development, who is the current governor of the state, actually designated Duluth as qualifying for that program for 1 year. Uh-huh. And they received the lion's share of the money because of their population, and the legislature corrected that in the next year.
Madam Chair, I almost am sorry I opened up that discussion. Mr. Michael again. I think it's probably wise to explore the idea in the future. It probably doesn't work today then.
President Barrett.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, we beat Laverne in football the year we won the state football championship. 20-0. Mr. Representative Schoen, you could be the first. You could help us be the first on our side of the state to do this.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Representative Barrett, I'm pretty close to Wisconsin as well, and I look at I don't want to probably play my hand on how I feel about us building that bridge into Wisconsin as well, and what that might do to our economy in Washington County as well, or what it could do for us in a positive. I'm still not sure, and I think that in the future we may have some need to review this as a whole, and I think that maybe this is a program that we should discuss next year as well.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, as I remember the Wisconsin system of property taxes, we protect our homeowners in Minnesota to a much greater degree, and they mix, and so they mix their classes, if they even have them, in one category. So that means that your homeowners pay more, and the businesses pay less. We look at piece by piece. So when you say they're high, they're high in more ways than one. But the homeowner, I think, gets protection in Minnesota by a classification system that we don't have in Wisconsin. Unless they've changed it, but I don't think so.
Thank right? you. Ms. Dalton. He's looking for someone to confirm that. Mr. Michael.
I will. Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, that you're accurately describing the Wisconsin system. They have a one-class property tax system. Their constitution does not allow them to have a classified system. Similar to what Minnesota had before it passed the Wide Open Amendment in 1906 or something like that.
Thank you. There you go. Further discussion, Representative Barrett, on the A1.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just be brief. We have two convenience stores in Taylor's Falls, one of which has gone under at this point, and that is because of the high. They used to get a lot of folks over from Wisconsin. It's only a couple hundred feet to buy cigarettes and other things. And since the cigarette tax went up, they now sold out sold out to another gentleman who can only operate it now using the pumps, using pay at the pump. So they'll open it up again, but without anyone working inside the store. They'll only be selling gas outside. The only reason he can do it is he owns the other pump, not too far away. So already, we're seeing a little bit more negative effects of higher taxes in our state. And so this would really help us at this time. So I'd appreciate a yes vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Okay, on the A1, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those say nay.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Thank you, though, Representative Barrett. Representative Lesch, I have one from you. And Representative Lesch, if you're ready, now moves the A17. Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A17 amendment comes from House File 802, on which my co-authors are Representative Davids, Zellers, and Ann Zells, and it addresses the issue of coin-operated amusement devices. The problem is this has been an ongoing issue for years for these little mom-and-pop operators where they're taxed on the sale of these video games or whatever they are. And now I should be clear that it does not include I should hold off on that. They're taxed on the sale of these, and then they're taxed on the revenue that comes out of the machine, too, when you put your quarters in, which I guess is a lot more than a quarter now. So my preference was to address the other side of it, but in lieu of that, it was a lot easier just to address it in this way on the sales tax of the machine side. So it's a good amendment for the little mom-and-pop outfits. It does not include vending machines, food and beverage machines, medical devices, or non-coin-operated amusement machines like karaoke, ping-pong, or pool tables. Please vote yes.
Okay. Discussion on the A17.
It seems a little like a rip at one.
Discussion on the A17. If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. A17 is adopted. Thank you, Representative Lesch. Representative Earhart has the A2. And let's see. I have a A16 after that, Representative Anderson. And those are the only two I personally have. Representative Earhart on the A2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When the business service purchased by local government were excluded from taxation, there were certain items that were not excluded because they were competing with private business, and so they were left to be taxed so they wouldn't put a drag on private business. There's a list of them, solid waste hauling service, electric utilities, and so forth. This amendment would add solid waste recycling services to that list because both government and private do solid waste recycling.
Okay. Ms. Dalton, and Representative Davids has a question on this. Listening to the testimony today, so we have, I think I sense where you're going here. But we had, you know, the private folks say, we don't want to be disadvantaged if someone gets a sales tax exemption, we don't. And then we had someone from the county say, just remember there's parts of the state where it's all government services. So, you know, maybe Ms. Dalton, can you tell us, is there a way to achieve what Representative Earhart wants, but still recognize those counties where they would only, there wouldn't be a private service? Or is that really going to violate SS? TA or whatever it's called these days. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am actually going to have to think about that one for a while.
Okay.
I mean, there isn't an obvious example. I mean, and the original list was really aimed at things where it was very clear that these are things that were generally provided by the private sector, golf courses and laundromats and cafes and things like that, that normally local governments do not provide, liquor stores. The solid waste hauling is one that does get provided sometimes by the public sector, sometimes by the private sector, sometimes the public sector contracts with the private sector for it. So that one was put in basically at the request of the industry, and the local government seemed to be okay with that. I don't know where the local governments are on the solid waste recycling.
Okay, Representative Earhart, then Davids. Representative Earhart?
I have someone who could testify to this.
We weren't really letting people testify, Representative Earhart.
Well, let me ask.
You know, does the committee want to? I mean, we haven't been doing that. I think we all heard the testimony on that issue. twice. Well, I heard it in division, and I heard it in full today. Representative Davids, as we think about that, hang on, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I support the A2 amendment, and if there's some problem, I don't want to mess with SSTA if that's the case, and I think Ms. Dalton will research that as this goes along the way, but I would hope we could put this amendment, the Earhart Amendment, on today. I think this would be very helpful.
Okay, and Representative Davids, I'm kind of thinking the same thing. I mean, we certainly have the ability to dial it back for the situations where there are no private competitors. And if Ms. Dalton does some homework and tells us that this isn't possible, then I think we would try to take it out in conference, because if it's going to be a problem mechanically, I just don't know what else we'd do. Is there other thoughts on this? Did you get all that, Ms. Dalton? We're thinking we like it if it works, but if it doesn't later and you tell us it doesn't, then we'll change it in conference. How does that sound? Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, I think that's not the worst idea. There are ongoing meetings with the department and with city and county people on this language that are continuing into next week and things like that.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Further discussion on the Earhart A2. If not, we're gonna vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The A2 is adopted. Okay. And I have a Representative Anderson now moves if she's ready. She has the A16, and then I also have a Representative Loon after that. Yeah, Representative Anderson. Does everyone have the A16?
Yep.
Okay, good. Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Which one? 17?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Earlier today, we heard testimony from the Chamber of Commerce on the provision that's in this bill that, in effect, shifts the tax burden to a small segment of small business owners. And so what my amendment does, and I know you're not a fan of shifts, so what my amendment does is it removes that shift, captures the revenue so that those small business owners aren't socked with a higher tax bill. So that's, in essence, what it does.
Okay. On the A16, Representative Dabney, thoughts? I just asked, well, there are people in other committees, and I believe this was Representative Loeffler's bill that is getting changed here, but maybe not. So, Representative Dabney, we're sending for Representative Loeffler if we can get her out of Health Committee, but maybe you want to comment on the A16.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. If we start from the assumption that this is the Representative Loeffler provision.
Which I'm not sure. I'm right. Just saying.
But there were staff who were nodding their heads as you were talking, so I'm going with the staff. What Representative Loeffler does is provide a reduction in property taxes to small businesses, lower valued business properties across the state. Is done exclusively within the silo of the statewide business property tax. So it doesn't shift onto other property classifications. That's the strength of the Loeffler approach. Supporting small businesses as they're coming out of the recession and getting back on their feet. To roll back to the discussion on June Accelerated, the reason that I brought that forward was I was having businesses in my own district that were seeing an increase in business. They were hitting the threshold, and they didn't see it coming. So we're seeing small businesses get back on their feet. We want to help them out more. And we're holding that within the silo that is the statewide business property tax, which I think is a strength of that because it supports the small businesses, doesn't shift the property taxes onto other properties.
Okay, Representative Anderson, then Davids. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm going to have to disagree with Representative Dabney because basically what this bill does as written is any business that has property valued over $150,000, which is pretty much every business in the metro area, in the suburbs in particular, now they are going to be hit with this because rather than everybody sharing in that burden, it's all those businesses above that $150,000 value, mainly the metro area and in the regional centers as well. So those folks that are maybe in Rochester, that are in Moorhead, that are in all those different areas, they're going to be socked with that and have to pay for it. And that's the testimony that we got from the chamber as well today. So what I'm trying to do is get rid of that shift that this bill currently has in law to make it fair for everybody and make sure that we're not hitting the small businesses that are in those areas of the state. And I'd ask for your support.
Okay, so we have Davids, Anzels, and then Representative Loeffler has made it in the room, and she'll probably have a thought, too. So, Representative Davids.
Pass, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Line 1.9 of the amendment, can somebody tell me what that means in terms of seasonal recreational property?
Thank you, Representative Anzels, because I whispered that same question, and that's good. We should all hear this. So, Mr. Michael, or someone else, Mr. Hines, can you tell us line 1.9, what's going on with cabins there, seasonal property?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Anzels. The existing statute on the state tax, as most of you know, has one number that is then split 95-5 between business and seasonal recreational. It's locked in split. Under this bill, or under this amendment, it takes basically the cost of the first tier away from the state, from the CI portion of it. So rather than continue the 95 and 5, it now writes the seasonal rec number in law. But it's the same number as the 5% is projected to be right now for 2016. So there's no change with seasonal rec. It just looks different because we're not used to seeing that number in statute.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for bringing that up, Representative Anzels, because I first thought, what's going on there, too? And I know Representative Anderson would have known that anyhow, but thank you, Mr. Hines, for walking through it. Representative Anderson? Or are we on Loeffler?
I just asked for a roll call, that's all.
Okay. So roll call's been requested. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and members just rushing in and kind of missing the explanation. But I can just say that the provision that's in the bill right now was carefully crafted so that it didn't have tails into the future in terms of additional costs, and it didn't have a negative impact on our school districts in any way who are under the purpose that we even created the state general levy to begin with. And it, you know, I think targets the money at the businesses that are still struggling to come out of the recession and helps us address the vacant properties in every Main Street across Minnesota. And so that was the balance that I sought, was to not necessarily, it was to target some aid to, the, I think, the properties that most are holding the key to our economic resurgence in many ways, and that we can fill those vacancies and help new startup businesses throughout the state. It wasn't my intent to give a tax break to all business properties because we just weren't there at that point.
Okay, and Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Loeffler, I know you were out of the room when I earlier spoke to this, but in essence, what you are doing is hurting all the small businesses that have been struggling in the metro area who have property valued over $150,000, and that includes businesses within your district. So when we're looking at this, but in essence, what you are doing is hurting all the small businesses that have been struggling in the metro area who have property valued over $150,000, and that includes businesses within your district. So when we're looking at this, and I'm guessing you could do a survey of property values across the state, there's plenty of small businesses that have been struggling through the same challenges across the state, whether it's here in this metro area, or if it's in Rochester, or in Duluth, or in Moorhead, or St. Cloud, any of those areas. They're now going to be socked and having to pay the cost of this shift onto them with higher property taxes.
Madam Chair?
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I'd known this was coming up, I would have had for everybody a copy of the handout that we had in the property tax division, which showed it actually does benefit lots of properties in both the metro and non-metro, and it actually doesn't have an increased impact unless you get over $1,070,000 in value. And Mr. Hines put together that analysis for us. It showed that these properties are everywhere. The greatest benefit, it is a progressive relief in that it, you know, the closer you are to the $150,000 in value, of course you're going to get more benefit. But you can be a $900,000 valued property and still, you know, not have be affected in a negative way on this. It goes up to $1,070,000 was the break point as calculated by Mr. Hines.
So we have Representative Dabney. I do want to mention to members, as you're thinking about this, that there is a state it's a cut in the state CI, so it's not going to make our committee's target either, just knowing that we'll have a tails issue. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to walk through a little bit more of the Loeffler provision, what it does is benefits every business with property worth assessed less than $1,070,000. Excuse me. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. In value. So if you're in the metro area and your building is worth $500,000 and you're paying property taxes on $500,000 in the state CI fund, your $150,000, the value of that property, is being exempted from taxation under the Loeffler Amendment. So if you're in rural Minnesota where the property values tend to be less, a greater percentage of your property is going to be exempt from the state CI property business, not seasonal rec. Seasonal rec continues to be taxed as is current law. But particularly for greater Minnesota businesses, this is a real benefit. For small businesses across the state, it is. Metro, you know, urban core, suburban, exurban, but I thought of this as particularly advantageous to rural Minnesota, where the property values tend, on average, to be lower.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. But what you're neglecting to discuss here is the fact that a lot of small businesses don't own the building that they actually operate their business out of. So if they're in a large complex that has maybe 10 tenants of businesses, all of those folks are going to be paying more as tenants of that building. So this is a tax increase on the small businesses that are just trying to make ends meet, maybe starting out for the first time. And I can think of, you know, all fingers and toes, more than that, of businesses in my district that are just part of a large complex, and they have one segment of it, and now they're going to get hit because they're going to have to pay more as tenants from that building. So this is a tax increase on the small business. It's a huge impact on the economic engine of our state, and I think this is bad policy, and we have a chance here to fix this right here now.
Roll call has been requested on the A16. I apologize. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And for those of you who weren't in the division, we talked about this as well, because just as in our property tax system, we advantage homeowners with the with a better, more robust version of the homestead credit versus the PTR for that's available for renters, because we do reward people who have sunk their investment into our community and plan to stay for the long term. This is the same thing. There also is economies of scale that a small business with its own little property, its own little business, its own little storefront doesn't have with someone who has, you know, a 10-story office building. And we had testimony provided by someone who's active in one of the small business associations who is a tenant in a larger building, and he felt it was still a good policy that should go forward, even though his particular startup business as a renter would not necessarily benefit. So I just wanted, for those of you who don't serve on the property tax division, to know that we did vet that issue.
Okay. Madam Chair, I can't imagine any business out there feels that it's okay for them to be penalized just because they happen to rent their space versus actually owning their building. And they're going to be the ones that are going to be hit by this. So just because they happen to not own their space, now they're going to have to pay more because somebody else down the street who owns their building gets a cut. So.
Any further discussion? If not, we're going to call the roll on the A16.
Lynchewski?
No.
Loeffler?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Anzels?
No.
Barrett?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Carlson?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Drazkowski?
Yes.
Earhart?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Hansen? Blesch?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Lilly?
No.
Loon?
Yes.
Mac?
Yes.
Marquardt? Myra?
Yes.
Paymar?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Runbeck?
Yes.
Schoen?
No.
Simonson?
No.
Slocum?
No.
Zellers?
Aye.
Marquardt?
No.
There being 11 ayes and 15 nays, the amendment, the A16, is not adopted. Representative Loon has the A8. If you're ready for that now, then Representative Loon moves the A8.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If members will recall back to when we first did House File 1777 on the House floor, the original House bill that did conformity and some tax relief, I had offered an amendment that I think went by voice vote, as I recall, or unanimously, on the dependent care credit, Minnesota's dependent care credit. Unfortunately, when we received the Senate bill that we passed by concurrence, that was not one of those provisions. So what this amendment would do would skinny down the increase in the renter's credit the 1 year from 6% increase to 5%. And use that additional money to reinstate that dependent care credit for tax year 2013.
Okay. It's very creative. Discussion on the A8. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm concerned about the A8 because it's pitting folks with dependents against renters. It reduces the renter's credit, and we know the testimony even earlier today before this committee of the tightening, or the tight, very tight market for rental property here in Minnesota, and it's getting increasingly expensive if you're a renter to be able to rent, the property taxes as well as other aspects of the rent, and I would hate to see us take that away from folks. Keep in mind that, of course, across the state, renters are more likely to be elderly and disabled, and so we're really hitting some of the more vulnerable parts of our population pretty hard here in doing this. Thank you.
Representative Loon, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, and just in response to some of the points that Representative Dabney raised, you know, first of all, the renter's credit is being increased in this, and if members will remember through the tax conformity process here, Minnesota right now is not giving any dependent care credit in its state tax returns. So, and the income levels for the renter's credit are much more generous than the dependent care in Minnesota. I asked Ms. Manzi earlier today when we were going through just to remind us, and in round numbers, she didn't have the exact chart, but it was something like $58,000. The dependent care credit is for much lower income. It's phased out or actually capped at, I'm going to go again in round figures, I think $38,000. And again, from memory, I wish I had my file with me, but it's 80% of this credit is utilized by single mothers with kids. We're talking about poor single mothers with children. It's about $80. So with regards to need for the money, I think certainly this is a lower income group of taxpayers, if you will, that would be receiving the credit. And I think it is a worthy trade-off. So I hope members will see it the same way. Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call on this.
Okay, roll call's been requested. On the A8 members, and Representative Loon, you are right. I agree with you. But I find myself in the same situation, having to choose between a few things. But, you know, at the end of the day, I guess I'd ask members to vote no. We've just gone through, and you worked hard in tax committee to get this in the first bill and on the floor. And you are right, and this is something that should be done as a part of a big negotiation with, you know, the whole entire legislature and the governor. We did succeed in getting some good federal conformity, and this wasn't in it. You're right, the retro part. My concern would be, and why I'd ask members to vote no, is that, you know, we finally got the folks off to the races in adjusting the software, in having the Department of Revenue is out explaining to people, if you filed, do this. If you haven't filed, do that. These are the kinds of things. And I think that sort of resets the table all of a sudden. So it kind of breaks my heart to say that, because I think you're absolutely right, but I would encourage a no vote. Further discussion on the A8. Further discussion on the A8. If not, a roll call has been requested.
Lincheski?
No.
Loeffler?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Anzels?
No.
Barrett?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Carlson?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Drazkowski?
Yes.
Earhart?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Lesh?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Lilly?
No.
Loon?
Yes.
Mack?
Yes.
Marquardt?
No.
Myra?
Yes.
Paymar?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Runbeck?
Yes.
Schoen?
No.
Simonson?
No.
Slocum?
No.
Zellers?
There being 10 ayes and 16 nays, the AA is not adopted. Further amendments, I have with me is a Simonson A5. Are you ready for that, Representative Simonson? Okay, great. So Representative Simonson moves the A5.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And the A5 is a portion of what originally was House File 2303 that was heard in the division. And the original bill called for a reinstatement of a 0.5% tax on receipts by hotels and motels in order to help pay for bonds that would be dedicated to making some improvements in the western half of Duluth. This particular amendment changes the purpose of the revenue and rather direct it towards promotion of tourism and recreational activities. It directs the revenues directly to pay the bonds down, which should, in theory, help us pay the bonds down much quicker, and then the tax will blink off.
And the A5, Representative Dabney, do you want to remind the committee, you know, what the original proposal was and what you rejected in your work and kind of what's happening here? I think it's a good compromise after the division first said no to half of the bill, and this is a different way to approach it. Representative Dabney.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And actually, Representative Simonson did a good job. Initially, the proposal was to assess this tax, but to use it for promotion. Duluth has resources, has a tax dedicated to promotion, hotel and motel tax dedicated to promotion. We thought that was enough, but I like the idea of both cities being able to do development projects, but also paying for those as quickly as possible and getting those taxes blinked off. So I appreciate Representative Simonson's work on this, and I'll be supporting it.
Further discussion on the A5? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The A5 is adopted. Representative Davids on the A11.
Thank you,
is
Madam
the
Chair.
Is the A11 passed out, Mr. Chair?
Or I believe it is.
A11. Okay. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll move the A11 amendment. What this bill does is this allows a tax deduction made for a hurricane that is made in, I believe, January and February, that you can count it towards your 2013 taxes. And maybe Ms. Manzi could get the fine details here on what we're doing or
yes.
attempting to do. Madam Chair and members, we've done this before in past in the Haitian earthquake, I think it was, and there's been some other ones. And this just allows money that is still given for a short period of time here. I think it's like maybe April 15th. Or no, it's March 26th. March 26th, they could count it for 13.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Manzi, and can you mention to folks what Congress just did? So we, and thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, on Tuesday of this week, the President signed into law a bill that allows charitable contributions made for relief efforts related to Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines that are made from yesterday through April 14th to be deducted on people's tax year 2013 tax returns rather than waiting to deduct them on tax year 14. This just came to our attention this morning since it's very new. I did look at some news reports, and based on those, my guess is that what is going to happen is that there will be a fairly significant fundraising effort by these typhoon relief organizations in the next 2 weeks to get people who haven't yet filed their 2013 returns to make contributions at the last minute and claim them. That's what the one of the news articles I found said. Now, if we don't conform to this, if any Minnesotans make those contributions in the next 2 weeks and claim them on their federal return, then they would have to file a separate, their state return would have to be adjusted to undo that contribution for tax year 13 and then claim it next year when they file their tax year 14 return. And I think that's a complication to it. Ms. Templin did receive a revenue estimate from the Department of Revenue on this, which she can speak to, but it does have a negligible revenue impact on the state of Minnesota.
Okay, thank you. Questions, members? I think we understand this. Again, as just as Representative David said, we've done this in the past for other international disasters so that folks get a charitable deduction credit for giving. If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. The A11 is adopted. Further amendments? I don't have any. So if anybody's got one, please jump in.
Third reading.
Third reading. Further amendments?
Nope.
No other amendments? Last call. No other amendments. Okay. If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the bill. And am I missing something? As amended. I'm going to renew the motion. We have this new how you're supposed to refer things. House File 3167 be re-referred as amended to Ways and Means. Further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. The bill has passed and is sent to Ways and Means. We're adjourned, members. Thank you.